Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan!
Jordan.
Have you ever been naked in public before?
Yeah, I've been streaking, I think.
Yeah?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
You're pretty sure? Well, streaking is something that you probably do while drunk enough to not remember it.
Listen.
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a show where that's not what we talk about. We talk about how I know a lot about Alex Jones.
And I only know what you tell me about Alex
that
Jones.
That is correct. Jordan, today we have a vast departure from the last week or two of our show.
We need a break.
We have been doing a lot of that Sandy Hook digging in and then that perhaps way too long episode about Alex being on Rogan, and so we need a break, we need to reset, and I decided it's been way too long since we've been in the world of Project Camelot, so that is what we'll be going over today. We'll get to that here in a second, but before we do, I'd like to give a shout out to a couple of people who have signed up and are supporting the show.
Wonderful.
First of all, I'd like to say thank you to Matt. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Next, CK, not Louie.
Ah,
just
good.
CK, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, CK.
Next, Alex. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
Next, Ian. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Ian.
Ian, thank you.
And finally, I'd like to say thank you to Caleb, who's someone who donated on a little bit of a higher level, and we appreciate it oh so very much. So, Caleb, you are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Sharp.
Bop, 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 bop.
Jar Jar Binks has a Caribbean black accent.
Black accent.
He's a loser little titty baby.
I don't want to hate black people. I renounce Jesus Christ.
Thank you so much, Caleb.
Thank you very much, Caleb.
If you're out there listening and you're thinking, hey, I like what these guys do, I'd like to support the show, you can do that by going to our website, knowledgefight.com, clicking the button that says support the show. We would appreciate it.
Please do.
I want to say real quick, after that Rogan episode, I was editing the episode, which took forever, and I had a mild buzz on.
Yeah.
And I got into a little bit of an argument with someone trying to fuck with me and troll me on Twitter. And I got really excited about it.
Right.
And I was like,
you were in the right headspace to be like, ooh, shit's gonna happen.
Well, I got really excited just about the actual interaction. And then, like, I started to see, like, why haven't I focused on Twitter?
You were definitely a little bit more than buzzed. If that's your thought process.
I very rarely engage with social media and stuff like that. I just don't really care about it at all. We barely post whenever we have episodes out or anything like that.
And I'm off all social media.
Right. And so I was sitting there. I was like, this is the future. Like what people maybe.
Twitter's the future in 2019. You finally figured it out.
That's the thought I was having. I am a complete Luddite. And it happens to me every now and again. I get really excited about the possibilities of social media.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I'm going to be on this posting all the time. And so I started following some listeners who was suggesting that I follow.
Uh-huh.
And I hope I didn't creep anybody out, but I'm never going to be posting stuff. It's back to me not caring about Twitter at all. But,
I remember
there was a brief window there where I thought, like, I'm following everybody who follows us. I'm going to build this account. It went so fast.
It was there and gone.
Out of my mind.
Yeah, I remember when we did the Austin show, you were suddenly very Insta into Gram.
On the Gram.
Insta into Gram.
Yeah, I was super in, and then I haven't posted since.
And then it was over.
Yeah.
It was there, it was gone. That is a document of our time in Austin.
You have these brief flickers of like, we can interact, we can turn this social media presence into a brand. Like, fuck you. As soon as I wake up, fuck you. What were you thinking?
The reason I got off Twitter was because it was after a show one night, and somebody came up to me and he was like, wow, you were really funny. Let me follow you on Twitter and on Facebook and on Instagram. And I was like, I don't really do that. And he's like, no, come on, man. You got to build a brand for yourself online. And I was like,
weird.
That's the least thing I think I've ever wanted to do. And so I just deleted everything that night.
Yeah. So anyway, that's to say.
Carol quickly.
That's just to say, don't expect that I'm jumping in and actually going to tweet.
Probably not going to happen.
Probably not.
No.
So Jordan, today we've got this Project Camelot episode in front of us. This is an episode where Carrie sits down with a gentleman by the name of Pierre Sabac.
All right. I'm feeling it.
He is a bit of a guy.
Yeah.
I don't know how to phrase this vaguely up top, but he believes that he has decoded a universal language behind all language.
Okay.
And that the aliens are fucking with us through our language.
Oh.
That's kind of his big premise.
Okay. You know what? I think that's the plot of Snow Crash.
I think it's the plot of a number of things.
Yeah. What's his name again?
Pierre Sabac.
Man, that's a great name.
He claims to be a consultant for Ridley Scott. But I can find,
that's fun.
I could find no citation on that other than his own website.
So he's
but
saying
I'm willing
that,
to believe it.
He's saying that Alien was written with his input.
I think it was Prometheus that he might have been involved with, but I'm, that's on my, that on my radar is, I'll believe you. I don't give a shit.
Sure.
I don't give a shit.
Sure.
So anyway, here's how we start the episode.
Hi everyone. I'm Carrie Cassidy from Project Camelot and
hi, Carrie.
I'm very happy to be here today. I have a fascinating guest. His name is Pierre Sabac, and we are going to be talking about what he calls holographic culture and the secret hidden alien code in language.
Very exciting. There is a secret alien code.
I like it.
We will find out.
What kind? How would it even work?
I would say that it's mostly involving snakes and words that have to do with snakes.
Goddamn sneaky snakes.
That's kind of how I would describe it at this point. I listened to the whole thing, and I don't know. I think he just doesn't understand linguistics. That's my...
Okay, that's
a good... Spoiler alert, that's my takeaway.
That's a good starting point.
That I'm going to be bringing up repeatedly.
Big question. Can he speak?
We.
In language, though.
I said we because like, I think he might be French, but that might just be because his name's Pierre.
His name's Pierre, so you assume he's French.
Yeah, I don't know. He can't speak, and actually he can speak a fucking lot. He doesn't let Carrie get many words in. He's being very rude through most of this episode.
The word edgewise is going to be used.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, here Pierre jumps into the proceedings, and he's going to list off some of his credentials and see if any of these things strike you as sounding like they're relevant to linguistics.
I studied theology at A level. I got an A at theology at A level.
So real quick, just because we're in the United States and he grew up in England, although I still think he's French based on the Pierre thing, which might be a bias on my part, I'm going to leave it alone. A-level education is done in high school. It's a part of college prep coursework, somewhat equivalent to, but not the same thing as like AP classes here. So say him saying he took a theology class in A-level, it sounds like, oh, you might, that might have been something real big.
Yeah.
That's a high school class.
Well, he did get an A in it though.
Sure. I'm happy about that. I'm sure his mom liked that on the grade card, but, that's...
Just like I got an A in French when I was in high school.
Right.
So I can tell you very certainly Pierre is French.
If that's your only contact, like really with formal education in theology, which isn't even linguistics, I got some questions.
I did have the opportunity informally to go to Oxford to study theology.
Informally?
This was partly due to the fact that, my teacher knew a professor and this professor was looking for, people, basically with the right credentials.
Which are none?
I basically met the criteria, but I decided to study fine art instead because this was actually, my passion. So I worked for a number of years as a portrait artist. I got an agent and I kind of exhibited within London at St. Martin's. It didn't really turn out too well. It's very difficult to make a living as a portrait artist.
Because aliens
in many
were fucking
respects,
stopping
it's a lot
you.
More easier for creative people to make a living now, basically, with the advent of the computer age. But then 20 years ago, it was extremely difficult. So then I did a teacher training course, and I taught fine art. And I did this for about 8 years. But increasingly, I became interested in occult symbolism. So I decided that I wanted to leave my job and focus full-time on writing.
So you wanted to do that? This makes no sense, man. So I found him to be a really interesting cat. This dude, because you know, you try and figure out who are these people behind the presentation that they make. Who are they? And he's just like trying to figure out like what the words in his bio even mean. Were flummoxing to me. It, you know, he's presenting himself as like an expert in secretive linguistics, which makes sense why he'd try and make everything as sort of elusive as possible.
Of course.
He'd use secretive linguistics.
See, that's on brand.
In the way he's framing things. Like,
exactly.
Like even you responded to, what does it mean to be informally said,
right.
Why do you come to Oxford?
Right,
what
right,
does
right.
that mean?
If I understand.
Did you apply?
If I understand his story correctly, he was asked informally to come to Oxford because one of his former teachers knew a professor.
Primary
knew a professor.
Yeah.
And they were like, we need somebody with the right credentials not to be in Oxford.
No.
And those credentials, I assume, were being a friend of a former teacher
getting
that the professor
a in your
knows.
Theology A
yeah.
levels.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
So Pierre refers to himself as a, quote, scholar on ancient languages. But even by his own telling of his academic story, he has a degree in fine art, specifically painting, and that's it. He claims he studied theology and had an informal offer to study at Oxford, which makes no sense. And even if it did, he's saying he turned it down. It really doesn't look like Pierre has actually studied any of this stuff in a formal setting, which is a huge problem because ancient languages are infinitely complex. And even scholars who dedicate their lives to studying them often disagree with some of the finer points about etymology and syntax. If you read his bio, he claims that he turned down this offer to go to Oxford, instead choosing to finish his degree in painting and art history at the University of Wales. Interestingly, the University of Wales isn't really a university as we understand it. It's a system of universities spread through Wales. For instance, the biggest schools in the system are Aberystwyth, Bangor, and Cardiff. And a graduate of one of those would likely say that they got a degree from Cardiff, for example, not the University of Wales. This may just be an example of him putting it really weirdly, but I find it a little bit suspicious. I decided to let it slide since it's a degree in painting and art history, so even if he's telling the truth,
who
it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
He probably does have a degree in painting.
Yeah, and I'll defend him saying University of Wales because he's talking to Kerry Cassidy. He's talking to a
but that's in
more,
his bio.
More American. Oh, it's in
that's
his bio?
That's in his bio.
Oh, okay. So he did not graduate from anywhere.
Possibly. I mean, the way I look at it is, like, you could say the University of Missouri, and when you do, you're referencing the University of Missouri Columbia.
Right. Because
that's the main campus of the university. But there is a university system, like, there's a UM Rolla.
Yeah.
There's other, like, satellite campuses.
Yeah.
And if you graduated from the University of Missouri at Rolla, you'd probably say you got a degree from MU.
Right.
Maybe.
Well, you know, I don't know.
Actually,
it's
not true.
Like, it's not like many people would say, I graduated from the University of Miami. Ohio. Like, they wouldn't, you know, they'd just say University of Miami, or they'd say University of Miami, Ohio.
Usually
like,
the latter.
There's no.
And the reason I stopped myself there, and I think my example is bad, is a lot of those other satellite campuses are specific to a certain thing you're studying.
Okay.
So, like, one of the satellite campuses will have, like, a really good ag program or
something
like that.
Right, right, right. And it makes sense that it's in a different place.
So if
you
have a degree from
there,
you would say, I went to this school and I got that specific degree from that school.
Right, right, right.
So maybe that's even a bad example. I don't know. I don't care to spend a whole lot of time on this, but I just thought it was weird because that's not a specific school. So also, in his bio, he says he was a member of the Institute for Learning, which I suppose is to bolster his credentials, because that sounds like a really brainy outfit. So I could see him wanting to put it in the resume.
I really think that's probably, like, preschool education.
Dude, you're so close.
Really?
Well, not preschool, but
oh.
The IFL is an organization that does not exist anymore and really only existed between 2002 and 2014. And its stated goal was training teachers to be better able to teach. It's not an instance of some place where he could have learned the languages or got credentials in linguistics. It's more an indication that he was probably on a track to become an art teacher, which he described in that clip.
Yeah.
And in the early 2000s, that was his plan, and it didn't work out. To further reinforce this idea, he claims to have been a member of the Institute, which is a specific level of their organization. And in order to be accepted as a member, according to their stated criteria, an applicant would need to have a diploma related to teaching and specific formal teaching qualifications. In order for Pierre to have been a member, his educational path after his art degree would likely have had to have been in teaching. This is further bolstered by the claim that he holds a, quote, postgraduate certification in further and higher education, which can, if you're not paying attention, sound like I have a postgraduate degree in some form of higher education.
Yeah.
But no, it's a degree in education.
Right.
So he was on a teaching path.
Right.
And then decided, I don't want to do this. I want to fucking talk about aliens, and I can read words.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Whatever. As he presents himself now, Pierre is a leader in the field of scaphology, which is described as, quote, the study of angelic vessels through religion and mythology. I'll go ahead and admit that he is a leader in that field, considering he made the word up. And
yeah,
he's the only
say.
Person who claims to be an expert in it.
Is that the thing that you walk under whenever they're...
That's scaffolding-ology.
That's scaffolding-ology.
Yeah,
okay.
Slightly different.
All right.
And
gotcha.
Probably a real thing you could study.
A real thing you could study.
Also in 2010, Pierre Sabak was a guest on the overtly Nazi-leaning and white nationalist show Red Ice Radio. Unfortunately, their shows are behind a paywall, so I didn't get a chance to listen to it, but the description of the episode includes this. Quote, "We discuss Zionism, Aryans, the connection to Mars, ritual sacrifice, or the origin of the idea of a Holocaust." That doesn't make me feel great. If you're going on a Nazi sympathetic show to discuss, quote, the idea of a Holocaust, I'm pretty comfortable assuming you don't think it was a real thing.
That's not good.
Or at least you got
that's
some
not good.
Got some questions
that's
about it.
That's not good.
They're real lucky those shows are behind a paywall, because I might savage some of those shows.
Oh, man.
And there's no way I'm even going to create a fake account.
Oh, good God.
To get
no.
in there. I don't.
Uh-uh.
Yeah. So this guy seems like he doesn't have any credentials to be saying the things that he does about linguistics that we're going to get to in a little bit.
Yeah.
When he starts to get into more of the specifics. He seems like he's someone who may or may not have been a fine painter, has a degree in painting and art history, wanted to be a teacher. His portrait painting business wasn't lucrative because the internet wasn't around. You know what is lucrative? Talking about weird shit.
That's a great career path.
It is.
That is a really great career
path. There's something
path.
I respect about that in terms of, like,
know.
In the same way that you respect the small time grifter.
Yeah, the small time grifter.
Yeah.
That's a, if not honorable, somewhat noble profession in American history.
Yeah.
The idea, it takes so much courage. Like, I couldn't just quit my job to go talk about weird shit.
Maybe you should.
That's
you're doing half of that now.
Technically, I am just still working my job and talking about weird shit. Fair enough.
Yeah. So this is where I found myself actually becoming interested in this episode, because before this, I'm like, this guy just kind of seems like he's got a weird but fairly common path of these sort of con people.
Yeah, he's like, got a telescope.
It's sort of a late career change that a lot of people make is like, shit's not going well. I'm going to pivot into this weirdness.
Yeah.
Because they know that there's large communities of people who are very suggestible, fairly gullible, and I mean, I don't think Pierre's bad with the word. He's pretty good at making bad points.
I don't think he knows how to read Sumerian.
Well,
oh boy,
of course he doesn't.
But there's like six people on the planet who know how to read Sumerian.
This is where I became interested, because Pierre, in this next clip, reveals what got him off his path from being an art teacher into being this guy.
None dare call
now,
it a conspiracy.
Now, granted, he doesn't say that this is what got him off track, but if you pay close attention to the sort of subtext, you'll see that is exactly what he's
saying. Angels don't dance on this pin.
No, but it is another book.
Now, there were a number of interesting authors that I found very fascinating, which inspired me to research into the subject of aliens and how we would define what an alien actually is. So there was the academic Robert Temple, and he wrote The Sirius Mystery. And I found that this was a very persuasive argument in terms of the ancient alien hypotheses. And I think certainly in terms of ancient aliens, his book really hasn't been bettered. I think my book studies ancient aliens, and this is another book, but until my book, there was no other book on the subject.
Damn, taking shots at Robert Temple.
Wow.
Until my book came along, there was nothing better than this guy. A little petty, a little narcissistic.
I like it.
So have you ever heard of this, The Sirius Mystery?
No.
S-I-R-I-U-S Mystery?
No. Is that about how Sirius XM came to be?
It is not.
Oh, okay.
I wish it was. That would be a better oral
mystery. That wouldn't be a bad book.
So The Sirius Mystery is a book published by Robert Temple in 1976. The book argues that a tribe called the Dogon in the African nation of Mali have had communications with extraterrestrials from the Sirius star system and continue to up till present day.
I like it.
These aliens from Sirius taught the Dogon about culture and art, which they then transmitted across the globe, creating the mythologies of Egypt, Greece, and all other cultures.
That's
basically
fun.
That's the seed from which all these cultures spread.
Again, black people cannot do stuff.
Without
it
aliens.
It has to be aliens.
Of
it
course.
Has to be something.
There is that subtle racism that deserves to be pointed out.
They could just be good at stuff. You can let it. Ugh.
So it appears that the evidence that the Dogon were talking to star people was that anthropologists who visited them were surprised to learn that the Dogon people were aware of the existence of the Sirius's, companion stars, which they shouldn't have known about since Sirius B and C are white dwarfs and are essentially invisible. So they wouldn't be able to tell that those stars existed, but they knew about them, which people in other cultures did know about.
Yeah.
But they shouldn't have known about. And there was no real way to make sense of the fact that they did.
Is that because they were relatively uncontacted? Like they were isolated?
Up till a certain point, yes, they were. Yeah. So this was not information that Robert Temple came to by visiting the Dogon or knowing anything about them. He learned about this star wisdom that they had from reading a book called The Pale Fox by Marcel Gruel and Germain Dirtelen, a pair of French anthropologists slash ethnographists who studied the Dogon. Gruel tells an amazing story of being initiated into the secret teachings of the Dogon, who told him of these invisible stars in the Sirius system, which they called Sigutolo. It's a great story, and really, if you look at the world at the time, it's super unlikely that they picked up this information from past visitations from other cultures, because like you were asking, they were fairly uncontacted up to that point, and the people who had come did not appear to have the information that they were relaying to these French ethnographists.
Right. I kind of don't like that, because that suggests that there isn't any kind of oral tradition from prior to any number of things occurring. Like, it is, I don't know. I don't know how to actually.
You're imagining that I'm not going to destroy this.
Okay. I didn't know if this was going to be a thing.
This is all bullshit.
Okay, fine. Yeah, I don't believe it.
No.
I didn't believe it to begin with.
This is just how they presented this stuff. This isn't true. So, unfortunately, in 1991, anthropologist Walter Van Beek led a team to live among the Dogon, ultimately spending a full decade living with them and learning about their culture.
On day one, they were offered a Coke.
He found that a whole lot of the things that Gruel and Dirtelen were saying and people had accepted as fact were super suspicious and likely made up. He wrote this about the Sirius idea. Quote, though they do speak of Sigutolo, interpreted as Gruel as their name for Sirius itself, they disagree about with each other as to which star is meant. For some, it's an invisible star that should rise to announce the Sigu, or the festival, like a holy festival.
Okay.
For another, it's Venus, though in a different position, appears as Sigutolo. All of them agree, however, that they were told about the star from Gruel.
Oh my God! Fuck off. Mm-hmm. Fuck you. Fuck you, Gruel. Why would you even tell him about the star?
Well, I think that there's actually an interesting wrinkle to this. I think we're going to get to it here in a second.
Okay.
Because I'm not sure he meant to.
Okay.
I'm not entirely clear about that. It's tough to nail down that, and he's long dead, so.
Right. I assume that he, like, walked away from the main camp, had to pee, started singing the classic Sirius song.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So the basis of this story is complete shit, but it should be pointed out that it's very likely that the French dudes didn't do this out of any actual evil intention. It's most likely that they asked the Dogon leading questions and misinterpreted their answers. Because their reporting on the study wasn't overly sensationalized, it initially got very little attention when it was published back in the 1930s. Either way, it's complete nonsense, but that didn't stop Robert Temple from using it as the centerpiece of his book, arguing that the Sirius aliens were at the root of human civilization, and his book has been a big piece of alien canon ever since.
Gotcha.
It should be noted that Robert Temple began working on the Sirius mystery in 1967 at the age of 22. His then mentor was a man named Arthur Young, who actually invented the Bell helicopter, but was so disgusted by the invention of nuclear weapons that after World War II, he completely dedicated himself to the real weird paranormal stuff.
I like him. He seems all right.
I mean, he's the reason a lot of this stuff is around, so I don't know if I like him for that. But
I mean,
he's a crazy dude who invented
A helicopter, and then you find out people build weapons that will destroy humanity, and you're like, fuck it, aliens.
Yeah.
Like, that seems like a reasonable way to go.
In 1952, Young established the Foundation for the Study of Consciousness, and there he would meet young, enterprising Robert Temple, who would go on to become a secretary for the organization.
Right. Robert Temple did get an A in theology in his A-levels. Yeah.
Arthur Young was super into the idea of the Council of Nine. In these paranormal conspiracy worlds, when you hear about someone channeling alien information, the Council of Nine is very often mentioned, where they're generally characterized as nine powerful alien beings from Sirius.
Of course.
And often have some sort of, like, creator, deity, emotions attached to it.
Naturally, naturally.
That sort of thing.
Right.
In 1952, the year he opened his foundation, Young was one of nine people who attempted to make first contact with the Council at a gathering organized by Andrea Puharich. Puharich was a bit of a paranormal hype man, and is most notable for introducing the world to Uri Geller, claiming that he had hypnotized Geller, at which point he was informed that Geller was the chosen savior of mankind.
That's nice.
Working for an entity known as Huva. Also, Geller could apparently teleport.
Right.
None of this stuff is true.
Is that how he got on The Tonight Show so often?
That is.
Oh, okay.
Also, Geller...
They didn't need to buy him airfare.
A lot of the stuff that Puharich would come out and say about Geller, like that he had come up with while he was hypnotized,
yeah.
Geller would be like, I don't know about that. Like, even he was kind of like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to be known as the chosen savior of mankind from an alien race.
That's not too bad, though.
Or some shit.
I just love... I love a good, like... Council of Nine. Mm-hmm. Like, you gotta love a good name like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it's pretty good.
It's so good.
It's very pervasive idea,
too. Oh, yeah, you can buy anything if it comes from the Council of Nine. Mm-hmm. Not just like, oh, these aliens talk to us. No, it was the Council of Nine.
It was the Melchizedek Order.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Ridiculous.
Templars!
So that was in 1952. And 13 years after this gathering, Young would tell a 20-year-old Robert Temple about the French anthropologist's findings with the Dogon people, and almost certainly added a little bit of his own wacky spin to it. People who have studied the supporting documents and the book Temple ended up writing have concluded, based on how weak it is on evidence, that he must have been writing it to please his boss, Arthur Young, who was a bit obsessed with the aliens from Sirius.
Hey, man, hey, I wrote this book for you. You want to design me a helicopter?
He's a young 20-something-year-old enterprising young guy who's hanging out with the inventor of this helicopter, and he's like... My boss loves fucking Sirius aliens. He's told me about this, this article about the Dogon having contact with aliens and creating civilization. I'm going to fucking reinforce it in this book.
Right. So Temple, by brown nosing his way into a helicopter, wound up creating an entire fucking mythology.
I mean, he wasn't alone
assholes.
In it. But, no, yeah, but because there's still like Eric von Daniken and shit like
that. Right, right,
like
right.
A lot of those people, I don't know exactly how the timeline works, but. It's not like...
Well, neither do they, because the aliens control it, Dan.
But it's not like he's singularly responsible for a lot of this stuff. He's just a piece of it. He's a big tendril.
Ah.
So, all that's bullshit. So, but that might make it a little bit of a surprise to learn that on the cover of the Sirius Mystery, there's a promotional blurb from Isaac Asimov that reads, quote, "I couldn't find any mistakes in this book."
He did not write that.
He did.
Did he?
He did.
As like a piece of literature?
I know that Asimov doesn't have the best track record, and at least not perfect. But this seemed like...
Do you mean with sexually assaulting people anywhere near him?
But this seemed like too much.
It's a little bit much.
A little bit much. It turns out Asimov later clarified what was going on here. Quote, "He sent me the manuscript, which I found unreadable. Finally... He asked me point blank if I could point out any errors in it, and partly out of politeness, partly to get rid of him, and partly because I had been able to read very little of the book, so the answer was true, I said I could not point out any errors. He certainly did not have permission to use that statement as part of the promotion. I'll just have to be careful hereafter."
That is perfect.
That's
that
good.
Is a perfect story.
But it also speaks to Robert Temple's manipulativeness. Like, getting that blurb on the cover of the book is obviously lending his work false credibility.
Well done.
Yeah. So
well
he's
done.
A con man, too.
Yeah. No, that's a good
Everybody's
grift.
Conning.
That is a good grift.
So Robert Temple wrote a shitty, misleading book to suck up to his boss based on misinterpreted anthropology put out by incredibly incompetent Frenchmen. And that is what Pierre Sabac cites as a major influence in his life, and that he says the book made a good argument. This guy is super dumb.
Yeah. Wow.
Isn't that great? Isn't that a great story?
Also, I really like...
That's
really
the kind of story
like,
that gets me excited.
Yeah, I know. That's a great one. I really like Asimov's clarification there, because it's not like, how dare he use this quote? It's more like, you got me on this one.
It's introspective.
You win this one.
Yeah, it's like, I fucked up.
Yep.
I'll be more careful in the future.
Yeah, exactly.
I technically did say that.
Yep, yep.
It's way out of context.
You
but...
win some, you lose some. My bad on this one, guys.
Yeah. So that's a delight. And now we get into like other influences that Pierre Sabak had. And one of them obviously is David Icke.
Of course.
He's the paterfamilias of a lot of these sorts of things.
Somewhat omnipresent.
Yes.
Ubiquitous.
But Pierre has an interesting criticism of David Icke.
I also, probably around 2000, I came into contact with David Icke's work, and I found his research absolutely fascinating. But again, I was a little bit dissatisfied with his work, not in terms of what he presented, because I found that this was very fascinating, but he had a lot of sources which presented circumstantial evidence.
Oh, did he?
Oh.
Oh, did he?
Circumstantial evidence. I want primary sources, Dan.
That's fucking awesome.
Circumstantial evidence.
I love anybody on one of these episodes, these Project Camelot dicks, just being like, that guy, look, I agree with a lot of the stuff he's saying, but he was not rigorous in his method. Fuck off.
You know, I thought he was really at the forefront. You know, his book about lizard people running everything, unparalleled. Until I wrote my book about lizard people writing everything.
I mean, he might as well have said something along those
exactly.
lines.
Yeah, exactly.
So he, like we've already, I think, firmly established, is someone who might be a good painter, but has no business or formal education or training in the world of linguistics at all.
None.
But in this next, I didn't want to include all of the, like, times he just rattles off words. And I can't chase down all of these, but
dog.
When he starts bringing up
arc,
dog does come up.
Nail.
Dog comes up.
Wednesday.
But
I can do it too.
When there are instances that he talks about Greek stuff that I actually know something about,
yeah.
we can talk about those.
Yeah.
But I wanted to include this as just sort of a cross section of what it's like listening to him talk about his work. Cause it's
filled with, petty shade.
No, not, I think he's through most of that.
He's through most of the petty shade.
I think
okay.
he's gotten through most of that.
Okay.
But this is just like, listen to this and just, it makes me uncomfortable.
Now, polyglottal symbolism does indeed prove that there is a universal grammar. And I think it's probably here useful for me to explain what a polyglottal symbol is. So for example, in different or numerous languages, you have paronomasia. Paronomasia is another word for a wordplay. So you have wordplays which repeat in many different languages. And I can give you a few examples of these wordplays. So in English, you've got the word God, and that's a reversal of the word dog. But you find the
Nailed
same
it.
Wordplay also in the Latin. Lato is a polo, which is God, which was the Roman God. And then you've got latro, which is a barker, again within the Japanese. Kami is a god. Kami is a wolf. Again, within the Arabic, Allah is God. Awa is to bark.
We'll deal.
So all gods are dogs? Is that what he's, the point
so.
He's trying to make?
I guess so. I'm not entirely sure. But we'll get to what he's doing a little bit down the road. Like, I can explain exactly why his thinking is very wrong. But when I started listening to this episode, first of all, I love that Robert Temple stuff, and I'll never not take the opportunity to talk about stuff like that. But then I started to listen to him just rattle off these words and make connections between them that are ostensibly trying to make a larger point that isn't there.
That doesn't make any sense.
And it really reminded me of, like, when I was fairly young, I checked myself into, like, a mental hospital
because
I was really depressed and I was going through the shit.
Yeah.
And I checked myself out of it because the people there refused to let me change rooms. And the roommate that I had in the room I was in was someone who was, like, he would always be carrying around a dictionary and yelling at me about various words that he found to be related to each other.
Right.
And I'm
not
saying that Pierre is in the same boat as him, but this is a preoccupation that some people have that's rooted in mental illness.
Right.
Like the idea of connections that don't exist being something that's super important. If you don't realize it, it's hidden, and it's hidden intentionally.
Right.
You know, it's
no, the it's, aliens came up with the word Wednesday, and they put wed at front of it, which is why all weddings need to happen on Wednesday. It's obvious, Dan.
It's that level, but with anger behind it.
Yeah.
Or at least the time that I'm referring to, there was that anger behind it. There's certainly a little bit of a hostility behind what Pierre's talking about, if only because he won't let Carrie talk, which
right.
is a little rude.
Right.
And then because of what's behind it, it is the idea of, like, usurping ruler aliens that are dominating the planet. There is an anger that he has towards them in his, like, I've cut through their code. Let me free you.
Oh, so he's mad at them. He doesn't like the aliens.
No, well, not the reptilians.
Of course, the reptilians are bad.
Raptors don't come up.
That's disappointing.
There are dog aliens that are now in play.
But they are also gods.
I don't fucking know. They get such a tertiary mention that I don't even have a clip of it. Carrie just mentions that there are dog beings. Like,
I like that. I like dog beings. I want a dog being.
They're a human being's best friend.
Yeah, exactly. I like any kind of, like, when they just throw in something that you're familiar with and they're like, ah, that's also an alien.
Yeah, no, but that's what they all, everything is an alien. Think of anything. There are fucking aliens.
What about seals?
Obviously there are seal aliens.
All right. What about bigger dogs?
Bigger dogs? Yep, absolutely.
What about small dogs?
Small dogs? Teacup dogs?
Yeah. Little ones that you can fit inside a purse.
They're little purse aliens. Yep.
They're little purse aliens?
Absolutely.
What about purses?
They're alien purses.
Oh, now that would be fun.
Uh-huh.
I would like to talk to my little purse.
Yeah.
Fanny packs?
It's just nonsense. But I got that sense from him, or I got that same feeling. And maybe it's just because I had that experience that it evoked it.
Yeah.
But I did get really creeped out by listening to him just prattle off words.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, there will be more specifics later where I will explain why he's wrong about them, and then explain on a larger sense what he's doing with linguistics that if he studied linguistics, he would know is bad.
Yeah.
But it just feels like someone who, is a little bit off.
Yeah.
A little troubled.
I'm going to throw this word out there, Dan.
Right.
I don't know if there are aliens about this one.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to go with coincidence.
Oh, no, some of it's not even coincidence. some of it's way easier to explain than that.
Oh, okay.
But in this next clip, a lot of the larger mythology, you take the linguistic part of it out of it, a lot of the larger mythology, I think, can come down to a misunderstanding of something very specific. And in this next clip, I think Pierre lets slip what that thing is.
Reality?
Within the biblical and apocrypha traditions, you have two creations. You have the first creation, which is the aeon, which is the expression of spirit into matter, which was the creation of the original anthropos. Now, the anthropos encodes specifically three types of races. One is the seraphim or the reptilian race. The other is the cherubim or the proto-human race. And then you have the jinn, which is a psychic race, which is related to the Ruach Elohim, the high spirits. So this is essentially the Anthropos. Now, the Anthropos was corrupted by the Demiurge. The Demiurge is the public workman, Demiurgos, which is the public craftsman. The public craftsman is really another word for a genetic engineer, because he engineered the public, he created mankind, and this essentially was the fall of the Anthropos.
He's just basically co-opting Gnostic ideas.
I can see where he
completely misusing them.
I can see where he consulted on Prometheus.
Oh,
that
totally
has a lot of bullshit like that in it.
Well, but all it is like someone who took theology in high school's version of Gnosticism.
Yeah,
you know, there's just like you throw in the Anthropos and the Demiurge, the idea of like the aeons and stuff like that. The first creation being that realm, and then the Barbalo coming in and. You know, Earth is the secondary creation that was created by the Demiurge. Like, that's a lot. That's a lot of stuff that's very complicated and is very frequently misused by people in these worlds.
This is such an example of Douglas Adams' way of viewing these people whenever these people are interviewed and they're always like, okay, I'm going to take something you know, the Bible, and I'm going to add this thing that you really probably don't know, but it's the same thing that you know. So it's the biblical
Apocrypha.
Well, he
even mentioned Apocrypha.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Not what this is.
No, no, no. And then he goes into, well, in the biblical Apocrypha, there's the Anthropos. And let me explain to you what the Anthropos is. And then that is also this and this and this. And then
it's
this
gyms.
Is another thing that you don't know, but it's what the, and then there is the Elohim and the, and so the whole thing that I'm saying is absolutely nothing, but it's stuff that you already know that makes me sound smart because I'm saying it differently than you.
You know enough of it to know that it sounds like I know something.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't know enough to know I'm full of shit.
I'm going to take the words that you know, I'm going to create new words about them, and it's going to make me sound smart.
Yeah. So in this next clip, we learn more about that anthropos, which is just the Greek word for man. But
I thought it was the anthroposy, which is the Greek word
that's
for
multiple men.
Tombstone with Wyatt Earp.
That is not correct.
Oh, okay.
This next clip is also not correct.
Okay.
And in this next clip, Pierre explains the path that humans have taken to coming to Earth.
So really, when we're talking about the Adamic man, we're really talking about the Martian. And I think this is interesting, and it's really important
disagree.
To understand this. Now, obviously, Mars was destroyed, and there was complete annihilation of that planet. My understanding of this, and this is picked up upon in the Zoroastrian traditions, is that the seed of man was taken to the moon, hence the esoteric signifier of the man in the moon. Word plays are found in the Greek, Semele, which is the moon goddess, and Simeon, which is an ape.
This dude is so annoying.
Transferred to the moon, and then was transferred to the Earth, which is the second creation. So, yes, there was a war in heaven.
Okay.
What? Yes, there was a war in heaven?
So we have established there was a war in heaven. Mars got destroyed.
Of course.
Man was brought to the moon.
Obviously.
Man was brought to the moon, as evidenced by the term.
Normal saying, man on the moon.
Right.
There you go.
There was a fucking Jim Carrey movie, man. It's regular.
Exactly.
It's normal.
There you go.
Totally
normal.
Yeah,
because of aliens.
And then, so after the moon, the man came here. I'm not sure why you had to outpost on the moon for a little while. Not sure what the point of that was.
Well, I mean.
If you're coming from Mars to Earth, you don't need to refuel on the moon or anything like that.
Says you.
That's absurd. That's absurd. If you make that long of a trip, you're going to stop over. That's crazy.
Well, okay. So if you are going from Mars to the Earth.
That's like driving from like Los Angeles to Columbia, Missouri, and you stop off in Jeff City on the way. All right? Jefferson City.
Well,
cool people from Missouri call it Jeff City.
He's not saying where everybody is in their orbits. You know, it's like maybe they left from Mars whenever Mars was closer to the moon than Mars was closer to the Earth.
You make a good point.
See, there you go.
All right.
Of course you
got to
stop.
Corrected. Depends on where Jefferson City is in its orbit.
Now, hey, how about throw this one on there? How do we even know the moon was orbiting Earth at the time that this occurred?
A lot of people don't think the moon is real.
That's also
the moon
true.
Landing. Just the moon itself.
Just the moon itself?
It's a hologram.
Is there a problem with that?
I don't know.
Are we talking Eddie Bravo? Why hasn't Eddie Bravo been on Project Camelot?
That is actually a really great question. I'm sure he would accept that book.
Oh, for sure.
We gotta start a change.org petition.
Yeah, a change.org petition.
Yeah.
Let's get them involved with this.
It seems to be the best way to do things. So let's start one.
First petition, get Eddie Bravo on Project Camelot. Mm. Second petition, really ask whether the moon is real.
Can you imagine how much you would yell at Carrie? That would be
so
the best.
Great.
So in this next clip, you know, just to flex his sort of broad spectrum of knowing languages, he's already talked a little bit about Greek. He's talked about a ton of other languages. Now he gets into Hebrew.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Does he think he can speak these languages?
I want you to put a pin in that because Carrie asks him that later.
Okay, good.
So in this,
well, I'm glad that Carrie has a good interview question.
It's not supposed to be a gotcha question, but it ends up being
Yeah, of course it does.
But
for asking that question, it's like, and you, of course, need to say yes to this question and then maybe speak a little bit of one of those languages.
It should have been a layup.
Yeah.
It really should have been.
Easy.
And she wouldn't follow up by what you just said, say something in the language. If he just said, yep, I do know these languages.
Should have been like, cool, let's move on.
Yeah. It's an intrinsic problem that, like, if you, like, I only know this from my study of ancient languages.
Uh-huh.
Like, I took semesters upon semesters. I was a minor in ancient Greek in
college. Right.
And, like, from my even admittedly baseline understanding of ancient Greek, one of the things that I was very impressed with is if you don't understand the nuances of the specific language you're talking about, you don't understand the particular words. Because sometimes things mean completely different things depending on the context of the sentence, depending on the declension of the noun. Things can mean different things. And
just think of the word fuck.
And,
if you don't know the context of the word fuck, you don't know what the word fuck means.
Totally. There are those things that go idiomatically between languages, and that existed even in the ancient world.
Of course.
Like, so if you don't study the actual language, you're talking shit. And that's what he's doing a lot of. But in this next clip, he talks shit about Hebrew, and he's trying to explain to Carrie where Yahweh came from, the Tetragrammaton, the word of God's name, the unpronounceable name of God. Comes from.
Yeah, it's when they were giving directions in Aramaic, they would be like, yeah, that's the right way.
That wasn't it. What it is introduction for Carrie to completely blow her show on air.
And again, the same idea is encoded in Yahweh's name as well, because the old Semitic word Eyah, which is Yahweh, is a pun on Aya, which is a serpent. So the terminology Aya, which the word Aya, which is Aya.
Hold on 1 second. Sorry,
it's my
about
kid calling. Sorry.
Because this is connected, I have to.
Yeah, it's fine.
Go right ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
Right, no, it's fine. So I was saying that the etymology of Yahweh comes from the word Aya. Aya is translated as I am.
He's like, it's so funny to me that Carrie gets a call in the middle of him trying to explain the wordplay involved in the name of God in the Hebrew Bible.
I love it. Right. Every time her show is revealed to be that silly in terms of like.
And clunky.
Yeah. 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 So good.
And what do you prove by, saying that, the Tetragrammaton is a play in some ways on I am, I was. Like that sort of thing. Like, cause that is the idea behind it. The all existing being.
Dan, what don't you prove?
I think you don't prove anything. I think you prove that okay.
I think you prove it all.
If you were an all knowing, all existing, all powerful God, your presentation to the people who are subject to you, obviously.
Would be in PowerPoint.
Certainly. If that wasn't invented, then you would just stress to them, I am, I was, I will be. That sort of thing.
Sure.
I don't see a nefarious wordplay thing here. I think I see a very basic thing that I think, as I understand it, now I don't know this totally because I haven't studied Hebrew in any in-depth way, but I don't think that's even like an unconventional thought. Like, I don't think that that's some sort of a like, oh, isn't this weird? I think that Hebrew scholars are cool with that one. I think that that's basic stuff.
See, this is what I'm saying. When you minor in ancient Greek, you don't get all the learning.
If you had majored in ancient Greek,
you would have gotten at least a little bit of Hebrew.
I doubt it.
Everybody knows that.
I doubt it.
Because the Council of Nine would have told you to.
Yeah, possibly. Or I could ask my dad.
Yeah, well, that's possible.
He certainly has taught college courses on biblical Hebrew. But anyway, in this next clip, we learn more about linguistic plays that the aliens have made. And I know that he hasn't established that it's the aliens doing it, but trust me, we'll get to the clip.
Yeah,
it's
coming up.
It's the aliens.
So if I understand correctly, so far, all we're talking about is little bits of wordplay, like cognates and that.
Yeah.
And then, like, twist it around.
You bet.
Like, where would God be if it weren't inverse dog?
You bet.
Like, that's the whole thing.
You bet.
That's his evidence.
Well, his evidence is supposedly trying to create the idea that he is aware of a universal language that's hidden behind language. Because of those cognates that he's found and stuff like
that. Right.
Because he doesn't study language, he doesn't realize that a lot of those are coincidences.
Yeah.
So, there is a lot of that going on. Yes, honestly, I've listened to this episode. It's 2 hours and something long. I don't really understand what he thinks he's proved. I don't know what Carrie is trying to get to other than, there's a lot of words that sound similar in different languages. That's all you walk away from this with. It's tragic. It's tragic.
He doesn't even have a fucking telescope, Dan.
He does. Well, he might. You never know.
Oh, that's true.
So in this next clip, we learn about the word worship.
Okay.
And
what's worship backwards?
Well, that's not it. But this is an interesting take.
Cattle mutilation is going back thousands of years, so essentially what they're doing is aping or copying what's happening within the natural world in terms of that these cattle are dying and they're being exsanguinated, and therefore the collection of the blood within the receptacle, which was symbolized as an angelic vessel, which was a saucer, denoting the angels, is very important.
So just to pump the brakes for a second, what he's talking about is UFOs upside down are bowls for blood.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Just making sure.
I was trying to get through him thinking that by saying exsanguinated, he wins.
Well, he's
like,
a linguist.
The moment he said that, he was like, check this out. Exsanguinated. You didn't even know that was a fucking word.
I just wanted to make sure that we were all on the same page and that wasn't lost in his accent.
And this is why we get the word worship from. The term ship, again, is going back into the idea of an angelic sailor. As I mentioned when we were discussing this idea before, there's a relationship between Malak and angel, but it's a polymorphic symbol. Malak also means a sailor. So this is an angelic sailor. And as I mentioned earlier, the angelic sailors were headed under Yahweh Sabaoth.
Now, I want to slow you down again. When you're saying worship, because that's very interesting, worship. You didn't talk about the first part of the word "wor." I'm not sure what that means, war or W-O-R, but ship is war. Also, you know, in essence, the reference to a vessel. A vessel being like a flying saucer. You know, they come in the people.
For sure. You can keep saying words, but I'm just waiting to start saying exsanguinated again.
This all comes basically from like old English. It's nonsense. The war at the beginning of it, it's like basically worthiness. And ship, from the old English is from like Skype, which is a reference to, a state of being. So it's a state of being worthy is worship, worthy of, being praised.
That's
where that comes from. Has nothing to do with ships as boats. That comes from a completely different etymological root.
That sounds like something that you would learn if you were studying linguistics.
Dude, it really seems pretty simple. Really simple stuff. But no, it's alien spacecrafts upside down are bulls and sanguinated blood.
Yeah. That's where we get worship.
Right.
But we don't need to worry about the war part. I'm just on ship right now.
Ship of war.
There we go.
Bada bing, bada boom.
I think that's even better than
UFOs
his bullshit.
UFOs are violent.
Ah, see, there you go.
Hey,
we figured it.
We did it.
Yeah. But watch out for bulls.
Absolutely.
I think that's the bigger issue here.
Yeah, bulls are scary.
Bulls are troublesome. Bull, which in ancient Greek is lobe.
Mm-hmm. Nah. So in this next clip, Pierre discusses a criticism that he must receive very constantly.
You suck!
Close. His answer is not very good.
You asked me earlier on, there's a subjective interpretation of words, and it's almost like the next question that most people ask when I talk about this subject is, yeah, but are you sure you're not making it up? But I say to you that there are polyglottal symbols, and when these wordplays repeat in many different languages, then we need to be paying attention, and this is essentially the artifact.
I would say that generally if you're a scholar in something and you're in an academic community or something like that, people aren't like, are you sure you're not making this up? Because this is bullshit. Most of the time, you're not coming from a great place to begin with if people are constantly asking if you're making this up.
That's the most polite way. Of course he's from Britain, because the most polite way for you to say you're full of shit in Britain is, are you sure you're not making this up?
You sure?
I am giving you one chance to say you made this up.
Right.
Immediately after the next sentence that isn't, I made this all up, I'm going to tell you, you're full of shit.
And his answer of like, well, if it's in a lot of different languages, it must be cool. Like, that's not a good answer to whether or not you're making this up. That's a process question. And you're just going back to your bad evidence. You need to talk about how you came to these conclusions, because it's dicey. So, there's a number of things that he says that are that same thing, like God backwards is dog, other languages, words that are like either a deity figure is similar to the name of a dog or something like that. It's like all that stuff pretty thin and not worth talking about, quite frankly. But this next one absolutely is, because it also, first of all, relates to Greek. So I know a little bit about it.
So you like it.
And secondarily, the thing that he's suggesting is crazy. This is lunacy.
But remember, Kerry, the word saucer is the wordplay on sauros, which is a lizard. Again, within the Semitic rekab, a chariot is a wordplay on kab, which is a coral, and keb, which is a serpent. So the serpent chariot.
It's just incredible. Yeah.
No!
It's a very ancient idea. And it's going back to the veneration of the serpent. The Greek word office, the serpent, relates to the office worker. This is why the office worker wears a tie. The tie is a symbol of the serpent.
Oh my God! it's pretty blatant.
It's real blatant.
It's pretty blatant.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man!
So I admire their restraint, because he said something that sounded very similar to Soros there, and Soros's proof he's the demon, he's the serpent.
Right.
The word for office in Greek is not the same thing as the word for serpent. Serpent is Phoebe. Or ophis, which I admit sounds a lot like office, but it's not related at all. The Greek word for office is grapheo. Our word office comes from the Latin word officium, which, as much as Pierre might want it to, is not related to the word for serpent, Ophis. It's very different. They're very different words that have different roots and come from different places. It sounds the same, but that's it.
It's wonderful for you to have real knowledge about etymology and how this guy is full of shit. But at the same time, I feel like anybody with even a cursory ability to critically think about this would listen to what he's saying and go, that is dumb.
Well, I mean,
that is a dumb thing to say.
I mean, even
you just, are dumb.
Let's allow the first stage of his conspiracy to be true.
Right.
Let's imagine that Ophis, the Greek word for serpent, and it's not even the most commonly used. That's the second most commonly used word for snake or serpent.
Right.
Imagine that that is where we get the word office from in English.
Yes.
So if that is the case, why is the word for Greek in Greek for office not that?
Well, because that's not what they're trying to communicate to. So the plan, as I understand, if I understand his plan for the Council of Nine or whatever it is that we're talking about here correctly, what he's saying is that they are speaking across timelines through different languages in order to influence human events by using this underlying secret language that connects all of them together.
So that would imply that their time travel manipulating abilities did not extend to before the Greek language was formed. Because wouldn't they want to fuck with those people too?
Well, yeah, like, but wouldn't they do.
How?
Well, what's the word for office in Greek?
Grapheo.
Grapheo? That sounds a lot like graph paper. What do people use in offices all the time?
There are actually similar etymology roots there, I believe. I'm not entirely sure. I haven't looked.
See, there
that
you
one,
go. But it's all in front of you. It, as Carrie said, Dan.
Same thing with graphite.
It's blatant.
Graphite and a pencil for writing. Oh, yeah.
And what is a pencil but a snake that can talk?
Graphing calculators. Graffiti. Oh. Conspiracy.
See, there you go.
That's so stupid.
This is spectacularly dumb.
So bad.
I really think the guy with the telescope had more to say.
But again, this goes back to Carrie being fucking so duped by accents.
Blatant.
This guy has a European accent, and she's like, fuck. Like, because if you imagine him saying these sorts of things without that accent, you're like, yeesh, yeesh. Like, imagine him with, like, a southern twang.
Oh, no, he'd be done. Stuff. You'd be done with him.
Yeah.
Like, there's no chance.
Yeah, well, you know what I heard is that the tie, the bow tie, the sign of the serpent, and that comes from the Greek word for office.
You know why we think what we think about the South, right? Because of people like you.
But this guy has a fun accent, so it's fine.
Ah.
So he has an interesting idea in this next clip, Pierre does, about what the Mayans were up to. As we all know...
I was wondering what the Mayans were up to in all of this.
Carrie certainly believed that the end of the world was coming in 2012.
Of course.
Which is one rare thing that she disagrees with Alex on, because at least he is on the record pretty clearly that wasn't apocalypse.
Yeah.
Good on him for that. But Pierre
we have currently the scoreboard is 999,999 to 1.
I think
for
it's
Alex.
To 3 or something like that. But
could
abandoned
be 3.
Those principles.
Yeah,
right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
But in this next clip, Pierre has an idea about what the Mayans were actually up to when they were writing those calendars and stuff.
I mean, this is only an idea, but there's a possibility that the Mayans were trying to change the timeline. It seems to me the possibility that sometime in our future, that on a certain timeline that mankind is destroyed or nearly completely annihilated, and is then replanted on the earth. If this scenario is correct, then essentially what we're doing is we're living in the past, and some of these cultures were aware of this knowledge, and what they were trying to do was try to almost avert a catastrophe by completely changing what the timeline would be in terms of the next generation and the next population. But this is not something which I can prove. But I just think that this would be an explanation possibly why the Mayans and other cultures were so obsessed with blood sacrifice, that there was an attempt to try and change the timeline.
That tracks.
That was astonishingly stupid.
It's wild.
That was truly almost respectable in the level of idiocy involved there. It's almost like even somebody who is stupid enough to believe that would be smart enough never to say it out loud.
Well, it's also interesting because someone who would have these ideas kicking around in their head generally wouldn't be able to articulate them in a thread you could follow.
Right.
And
that's
then
true.
On top of that, have the wherewithal to, in the middle of it, be like, I can't prove this.
Yeah.
Because generally these people would be like, here's an outlandish thing that I believe in, and it's definitely true. There is that weird restraint that he's showing that also I kind of, there's a part of me that resents it.
Yeah. I really kind of think that he captured, like, former WWE writers, you know,
like
the ones.
Freddie Prinze Jr.?
No, not him. Isn't he still a writer for WWE?
No, I think he's a former writer.
No, who's
Tony
the...
Hinchcliffe?
Definitely.
Okay.
He captured him, it got him in a basement somewhere, and he's just like, give me your wildest bullshit.
Well, the Mayans are trying to change the timeline, and that's why they're into blood sacrifice.
I'm going to say that on TV the soonest I can.
Yeah.
Man, that's stupid.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Not as stupid as this next clip, though, because it gets back into talking about Greek words, and he blows blows it real bad.
The Mayans were trying to change the timeline?
Because they knew that a crisis was happening eventually, and you and I right now, we're living in the past of that future or whatever.
Right.
And they knew that back then. They're trying to avert the... Maybe 2012 was really just trying to avert the disaster that would have happened in 2028 or something like that.
Oh, I thought he was thinking that the reason that we didn't all die in 20, I thought this
oh, no,
was
he
like
might
a,
have been.
I thought this was a retcon for why we didn't die in 2012.
Totally might
because
have been.
The Mayans knew we were going to die in 2012, and so they sacrificed a shit ton of people in order to change the timeline, because in 2012 we would have had a complete disaster or merely been annihilated.
Dude, your take on it is just as valid as anything I can come up with. That might be what he's saying.
I kind of think that's what he's trying.
Saying
I think he's retconning it.
He's saying something in that ballpark. I know that much, mm-hmm. but that beyond that, I'm unwilling to comment.
Huge fan of the Mayan ballparks.
Yes,
a lot underappreciated.
The goal is to lose because if you win, you're dead.
You die.
Yeah. So anyway, here's this him screwing up again with Greek.
In the Greek, basilisk is a serpent. Basiliskos is a type of king.
So this is in a long string of various cultures having words for like royalty that are sort of tertiarily involved.
Going through everything that could be snakes.
Yeah, and here's the problem with this one. I don't know about I don't know Persian. I don't know Sanskrit or any of that stuff, so I can't speak to it. I'm sure it's as bad as this. If this is his example that I do know something about.
Right.
So the issue here is that Pierre is misunderstanding how language works. There's a mythological being, which dates back to at least the time of Pliny the Elder, called the Basilisk.
And Pliny the Elder was right on. Everybody knows him now to be 100% accurate.
This is a large rooster-snake hybrid that can kill you by looking at you. The issue is that it was named the Basilisk because of the Greek word for king being Basileos. And the idea that this thing is the king of the snakes. So in Greek, it was called Basiliskos, which is just a slight tweaking of the word to mean little king.
Yeah.
That's all that is. This isn't proof of some kind of linguistic wordplay seeking to hide the reality of the world, or at least hiding it until someone as smart as Pierre comes along and cracks the code. It's just a mythological creature being given a name to reflect what the teller of the story wanted to convey about the beast, namely its royalty. This would be legit as stupid as me making the argument that kings are notoriously all drunks because there's that cream ale out there called Little Kings. And why would the word be the same if it weren't trying to encode some deeper hidden reality about kings?
Aliens.
Little Kings.
Aliens.
The name Basilisk comes from Basileos, comes from Basiliskos. So that stuff is just putting the cart before the horse.
Right.
In some ways. Or reimagining how linguistic evolution happens and how things are named. It's fucking incredibly stupid. This is baseline shit.
Right. No, the French phrase le petit mort.
Little death for the orgasm.
Little death. That is actually coming from the Mayans because every time you came, you used to die.
True.
That's just true.
Well, I know this French guy who might be English who told me that. So this entire interview and the basis for Pierre's supposed scholarship boil down to two phenomenon in the study of language that Pierre would be much more aware of if he actually studied languages he pretends to be an expert in. These are what's known as false cognates and false friends. There are tons of examples of words in different languages that sound similar and often even have similar meanings, but it would be wrong to say that they're connected because they come from completely distinct etymological bases. This is what's called a false cognate. One of the most common and famous examples of this is the word dog being the same in English and in the aboriginal Barambam languages, despite there being no relation between the two cultures that would explain this commonality. What you have to consider is that every language contains thousands and thousands of words. So while it seems impossible that two cultures would come up with the same name for the same thing, given the huge vocabularies you're looking at, it's bound to happen in some cases just on a probabilistic basis.
Yeah.
What's important here is that these things are understood by people who study linguistics because they consider the etymology of the words and how these languages are formed and where the influences come from. It's not something that's mysterious and completely lost to us.
And a false friend is Alex Jones to Joe Rogan.
It's a sneaky snake.
It's a sneaky snake.
There are words in languages that look like they're connected and sound very similar but mean completely different things. These are what's known as false friends, and they're often a result of languages borrowing words from a shared source language and then tweaking the meaning over the course of time. All Pierre Sendak does is pretend that just because a word in Sanskrit sounds similar to a word in Japanese, they must be related, as proof that the reptilians are playing tricks on us with words. It's an almost bafflingly simplistic way to look at linguistics.
What about, Dan, the Native American group that spoke Japanese?
What? I'm not aware of this.
You didn't
group.
Know about this?
No.
Not group. Tribe or whatever it is. The linguistics professors found that their language was strikingly similar to Japanese.
Right.
So that clearly means aliens. Contacted them, and aliens are Japanese, so we can assume that all Japanese people are aliens.
I mean, without looking into it, I don't know what the explanation is, or even if you're not making this up. But assuming that you're not, there are plenty of reasons for that to be the case.
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
There are 100...
I'm going to go with Mayans.
There are 100 different explanations for how cultural transmission happens. That sort of thing.
And it all comes back to the Dogons.
Trade routes that happened in early times. All that sort of stuff.
Like the Silk Road?
Any of that kind of shit.
Could be that.
It explains a whole lot of stuff. And look, I'm not an expert in linguistics. I like languages and stuff like that, and I have a toe in the water in terms of knowing what I know about Greek.
Yeah.
But because I do know that, I have had to study some of this stuff. That doesn't mean that I know what the Sanskrit roots of things are or anything like that, but it does inform my ability to know how you would find it out.
Right.
So that part is where I get a problem with him, because these things are so easily explainable, like the basilisk basileos kind of thing. It's like,
yeah.
Well, come on, man. Get out come of here on, with that. Get out of here
on,
with that
man.
Shit.
Come on.
Or the worship ship. Let's forget about the prefix on the word. Fuck it. Who cares? It's
ship.
An upside down bowl for blood.
Ship.
Yeah. It's like, this is like, it's embarrassing on a number of levels.
It's incredibly embarrassing.
For both of them.
This is
for
stupid.
Carrie and for Pierre.
Like, yeah.
He's presenting a fun theory, namely that the reptilians are behind everything and they've tricked us with language for years.
Of course.
And that's fine. I understand he's got to find a way to not do portraits for no money for the rest of his life.
Yeah, that's
I don't
tough.
Hate the hustle
that's
or whatever.
Tough.
But it does indicate a real failing on Carrie's part that she doesn't understand linguistics enough to understand, like, this guy does not know what he's talking about. He's presented his academic credentials that have nothing to do with this subject. He's talking about deeply complicated systems of language that he has, I guess, read an article or two about. And his inspiration for all of it is a book that's a lie.
Yeah. Yeah, you correctly summed it up. It's one of those things where you are absolutely capable of tricking people who are not going to look into it.
Right.
Like,
or who have no interest in looking
yeah,
into it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you're
or
charmed
have a vested interest in not looking
Yeah,
into
well,
it.
Yeah. If you're charmed by the idea of getting super, super high and saying, look at all these words sounding similar.
Like Rogan?
Yeah. Then you'd be like, holy shit, that does make a lot of sense. But if you're somebody who's like, okay, cool, that sounds like interesting information, I'm going to take one more step and then, oh, no, you're a fucking idiot.
Well, I think he kind of inoculated himself from the second step by earlier, like a couple clips back, being like, people come up to me and they say, Pierre, did you just make this up?
Yes.
And so, like, he sort of shielded himself from Carrie asking that question because he's
He's already
used a straw man character to ask it to himself.
He's already brought it up and addressed it and solved it. Right. So,
So, in this next clip, we get to why this is sort of relevant to our world. And, like, Alex Jonesy themes start bleeding into the interview.
God damn it.
Because I think Carrie has allowed him to speak his piece about how, like, reptilians are doing all this shit.
Sure.
Whatever. Language is a conspiracy.
Sure.
And then.
That is his point, isn't it?
Basically.
All language is a conspiracy.
Basically.
Okay.
And so Carrie wants to weave it into what she wants to talk about politically.
Right.
A little bit.
The moon.
Okay. Also, wanted to also bring up maritime law. That we're basically ruled by maritime law. So it's all.
You're a sovereign citizen.
And Jordan Maxwell talks about that a lot.
It's not something which I'm an expert in, but we can see certainly that within the etymologies of government, gubernatio is to steer a vessel, and this really relates to the ship of state. And we can view the ship of state as a mirror image of the ships, which is an angelic ship.
Of course.
But when you talk about, like, the ship of state and stuff like that, it's kind of just a metaphor. But then also, like, you have to consider, again, the ship part in worship and ship are different roots. Just because they are the same word and are written the same and sound the same doesn't mean that they come from the same etymological root.
You're crazy.
He's obsessed with ship because he doesn't understand the branching path that words take.
No,
it's
so
crazy.
The reason that we are under maritime law is because, and you can take this from the etymological roots, Mary and time.
Time to get married.
Which means that we are married to our concept of time.
Ooh.
But also, Mary can mean happy. So we are happily married to our concept of time.
Or we're happy.
Which is why they
time.
Run everything. Yeah. No, we can't do that. Because it has to mean two things.
Shit.
The aliens.
Boats.
Reptilians.
Boats.
Watch out for boats.
Alien boats. Upside down, blood.
There you go.
I promise.
Upside down, blood.
I promise you I'm not editing this episode in a way to make him look like a fool or anything like that. All I've done is cut out rambling paragraphs of words.
Yeah.
Basically. This is a... Ultimately, when I started listening to this, I was like, we have to do an episode because I love the Robert Temple stuff.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about that. And then as it went along, I'm like, this is a desert of clips. I can't cut anything out of here because he's doing these like 3-minute long paragraphs that he's just delivering, and Carrie's like, what? And then he just talks over.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is just tragic. And then you get to the end. And we're at this point where Carrie starts bringing up, like, maritime law, and some familiar themes start to take shape. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, we can deal with that.
Does he?
But I just wanted to stress, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That I'm not making him look like an idiot.
No.
He's an idiot.
He's an absolute moron.
I want to be clear about that.
Does
Go listen
he,
to the whole fucking episode if you want.
Yeah. Does he address that he is using language, which he insists is a conspiracy, by aliens?
You're asking me if he addresses it. What does that mean? Address. What is that? What is it? What's add? That means to bring it in. Something in.
There we go.
Dress is a something that is a traditionally female garment. You want me to put on a dress? Is that what you're asking me for?
I am asking you.
Then yes, I
or
will.
Or I am asking him. I don't know who I'm asking anything to anymore, because the very words I speak betray how important the aliens are to our civilization.
Reptilians want everyone wearing dresses. Confirmed.
Because
the only thing that
makes sense for his argument to be of any validity is if he then says, "And I am working on a language that is uninfluenced by this."
He's
because
trying to
anything
push Esperanto,
else he's doing,
I will say that.
Is he?
No, he's not.
Okay, because if he was, I'd be fine with that.
That kind of makes sense.
I would be fine with that.
One world language.
If he doesn't bring up the fact that he is now working on a language that is unencumbered by alien influence, then he can go fuck himself.
Well, he did bring up at one point that, like, he's a twin, and him and his...
Oh, well, then never mind. He's right.
Him and his twin did, like, telepathically interact when they were younger.
Of course.
And we all know from studies that twins telepathically connect and then also have their own languages that are gobbledygook to everybody else.
Right.
So, I mean, there is that. There is that in there that he's like, maybe everybody should use telepathy.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if he, like, actually advances that as his solution.
Yeah.
Or anything like that.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
Are we okay with twins?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Twins are fine.
Two of the same person? I don't think so.
Twins are fine.
I don't think it's okay.
So
that's the only thing that I'm racist against. There can only be one, Dan.
Fine. A Highlander version of fertilization.
Exactly.
Great.
There you go.
So, look, he's Pierre's a guy who is pretty into like calling out wordplay in past cultures.
Clearly.
And one of the reasons is because the serpent, and in this case that means sort of a demonic being, and the reptilians.
Naturally.
They're into wordplay. They're super into it. They love it. They're like those friends you have that you go hang out with, and it's just puns across. Yeah, like, it's just nonstop
aliens
puns.
Aliens are just into puns.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that. I like that.
You could hang out with aliens.
I don't want any nefarious aliens. I just want aliens who are just going on pun runs. I'm a big fan.
I like it too, but it does get a little frustrating at a certain point.
Mm.
At about hour two, you're kind of like, oof.
Oh, no. I already hate this guy and I wish I'd never talked to him.
Well, but it's fine. He's against the wordplay of the serpent. So you don't have to hang out with him. You can just hang out with the serpent.
Okay. I'm so cool with that.
Here's why the serpent is into wordplay.
Of course.
The serpent likes word games. As we said before, the tengu in Japan is related to tango, which is a word. So,
wait, hold on.
Yeah, no,
good justification.
No, it's also a word.
Also, I love just the serpent is into word games. That might be one of my favorite things I've heard, just like as a sentence. The serpent is into word games.
Man has always been battling the shores, Dan.
They're obsessed with wordplay, and it's encrypted throughout human languages. Now, I have a theory about this encryption. I think one of the reasons why they're using what I refer to as the artifact, which is this high degree of artificiality found
the Ark
in
of the
human
Covenant
languages.
So when he says the artifact, what he's talking about is this idea of a universal grammar that he's proved with all of these disparate words in different languages that sound similar or appear similar.
Japanese has tengu, we have tango. Artifact.
Boom.
Done.
So that's his.
Move
that's,
on.
That's the artifact that is the proof of the alien transmission of blah, 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 blah,
sure.
blah, blah. Culture.
Sure.
Linguistics.
Of
all
course.
Of that stuff, which is like, okay. I just need to make that clear because he hadn't brought up the artifact yet.
It is due to telepathy. And I think essentially if you encode polyglottal symbolism so that all the words in a sense branch out and you find this commonalities or the similar correlations within the Earth's languages, then you can take a Chinese man and you can take an English man, and they both get abducted. They both don't speak the same language, but when the angels are talking to them, bang, they understand exactly what they're saying because their language is working to a universal grammar. This grammar is the artifact, which is found within subliminal symbolism.
Okay, very, very well said.
Well fucking said.
I do
Dan.
Agree. It was well said. It's a dumb idea, but it was a dumb idea well said.
Presented well?
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I've heard way worse. but I would suggest that, like, we're really undercutting aliens on this one. Like, we're really...
Yeah.
That seems like a cumbersome plan, because it has to have been going since Chinese existed as a language, and the morphological roots of the Chinese language. They could have learned Chinese in that time. These aliens could be, multilingual in all Earth languages. Can't be that complicated for aliens. Why do you imagine that it's difficult for them to learn languages? Why not just introduce a babblefish? We have
right. Like, we're Douglas Adams.
We're
yeah.
talking about crazy shit. Why not?
Well,
why
this is Snow Crash. This is Snow Crash explaining
it.
Away. It's a book. It's never been made into a movie.
Never read it.
No, it's explaining away the Tower of Babel.
Right.
By going through ancient Sumerian.
Uh-huh.
You know, like with the Tower of Babel, what happened was man freed himself from the dominance of the Nam Shub, the people who can speak things into being.
Right.
Or essentially hypnotize all humanity.
Right.
So by the Tower of Babel coming down and everybody not being able to speak the
Nimrod.
Same language, the whole thing falls apart, and that is protecting ourselves from this linguistic hypnosis that
right.
can happen. And he is an example of somebody who is trying to hypnotize you by just saying a bunch of words really, really quick.
Like, he sounds similar.
Yeah, he's learned a bunch of $5 words that he uses to surround dog equals God, and then he calls it a day. I get it, man.
Right.
I got you.
There wasn't any point when I was preparing this episode that I didn't think it would be very transparent.
No, I know, but it's like, I don't understand how somebody could listen to him say one paragraph and not be like, I got it. We're going to move on here.
Well, and it becomes especially bad after this next clip where Carrie asks him that leading question that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Do you actually speak these other languages? I mean, are you multilingual?
No, I don't. I would describe myself as a comparative etymologist, so I don't speak the languages. But I'm interested and I'm obsessed with this polyglottal symbolism. So again, if I'm following an idea through and I'm thinking, well, okay, does that symbolize that? Then I'm not just looking for it in one language. I look at it in the Arabic and say, okay, can we find that in the Latin? Oh, yeah, we can. Can we find that in the English? Yeah, we can. Can we find that in the Greek? Yeah, we can.
That's not how this works. You can't have no awareness or understanding of these languages and just look for words that are similar. Like, that's taking what the study is out of it.
Yeah.
You're just looking on a very surface level. Can I make an argument out of this?
Right.
That's all he's doing.
No, he might as well have just said that he's got a bunch of phonetic dictionaries from all different languages, and he just closes his eyes, turns a page, spins his hand around, and presses down on it. He's like, okay, this one says Canterbury, so let's go and see if there's a phonetic Canterbury in Chinese. Like, that's what he's describing.
Yeah, basically. I mean, Canterbury's a bad example, but
Canterbury's
yeah, absolutely.
A terrible example.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing.
I have no idea why I came up with Canterbury.
Not sure. Actually, he's British.
Could be.
I don't know.
His tails are full of shit, too.
That's true.
Yeah?
It's the same sort. That is exactly what he's doing. It's just a embarrassing. Like, if you're presenting yourself as an expert, you have the softest fucking interview in front of you you've ever had.
Yeah.
You're talking to Carrie Cassidy, and you go on, and she's like, do you know these languages? Like I said earlier, you're not going to be asked to prove it if you say yes. If you say no, that's suspicious. And then if you're like, well, what I do is I go around and I find, like, is this word in other languages? Is this word? Like, all you have to do is not say stuff like that, and then you could maybe sound like you know what you're talking
yeah.
about. But I don't know. Maybe he's not used to having people call him out.
Also, what's his baseline for proof? You know what I'm saying? That's a good baseline.
Not bad. What do you mean by that? I only did that because I don't understand the question.
So he says
baseline for proof.
So
is
so
a baffling
his,
idea.
So his idea is: I go into the English dictionary and I look and I see. Oh, is there this word in Latin? There it is. Oh, there's this word in Greek. There it is. Oh, there's this word in Chinese. There it is. How many languages is required for him to prove that connection?
Clearly two.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, one to one.
So how can you even consider describing a universal underlying language when you only have a few examples from a couple languages, knowing that there have been thousands upon thousands of languages?
Right. Like, what you'd need to do is you'd need to find, like, I don't think this would even prove it, to be just totally upfront. Like, so his idea of, like, Basileos being king in Greek and then Basilisk being this snake-rooster hybrid character from mythology, he would then need to prove in other languages that there is a Basileos connection
exactly.
or something like that being cross-transmitted through all of them instead of culturally ambiguous things that are similar in other cultures.
Yeah, yeah, you absolutely could not do that.
Because the only thing you can prove from that specific Basileos connection is that whoever initially created the mythological being wanted to impart that it was kingly.
Right.
That was it. That's all you can really prove with that. Can't really prove that king equals snake.
Right.
Because it doesn't work that way.
The only way that his bullshit would even be the only way that it would be considered is if by some ridiculous coincidence, literally every human language, dog means dog.
Well, there's only two that we know of. One is that Aborigine culture and ours.
Right.
So that's something that is like, that was a puzzle and a complete mystery for linguists for a really long time.
Nobody had any idea. It was crazy.
Yeah.
But if it was like, oh, in Chinese, the word dog, the sound dog, transfers to dog. And in English, dog is dog. And in Swahili, dog is dog.
But I honestly
and
don't
in
think that
French,
even works.
Dog is dog. It would just be like so much of a coincidence that you could not help but think.
I agree.
Maybe there's something there.
I agree that that would be a cause to take a step back.
Yeah.
But I still don't think it would prove anything. Because a lot of those cultures might have etymological roots of like whatever dog is based on that could be being played with.
Of course.
That are different between like cross culturally.
Of course.
So like even that, like I know my mind would be blown if everybody called a dog a dog.
Exactly.
But it still wouldn't prove his argument that aliens created language to fuck with us.
It would not prove anything.
No.
But it would make you go like, I'll listen to you continue. Yeah. Instead of like, see,
well, we're doing a show, so you got to listen to
it. Well, that's fair. That's fair.
You don't have a choice on that one.
or
but
even,
if you were an academic and you were listening to him, you just like, that yeah. is what would require you to not kick him out of the office.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I studied it, and in every language, even in American and French and different sign languages, everybody knows that you are sitting on right there is an office chair. Everybody says it the
snake
exact
chair.
Same way. Everybody says it. It's a snake. That's because of demons and aliens or whatever. And you're like,
and that's why
fair.
All people in offices wear ties. Also, by the way, what about startups that
there
like, you
go.
Wear like casual clothes? Are they working against the serpent system? Is that implied?
I don't think anybody has ever really taken down an argument by saying, what about startups?
Well,
before?
But like legitimately, if wearing a tie is the sign of the serpent office in Greek, like what if that's the case, then bucking that system,
right.
These startups who are evil in and of themselves that allow you to dress casually, they're an affront to the serpent system.
Right.
How does he deal with that?
Doesn't.
Well, we've been having the great tie v no tie wars for a long time, and that is not including the people of Thailand, who are tertiarily involved but not as a major player. So you've got Google, right? And they've been fighting against GE. I don't know what you want to. I don't
sure.
know what you say. Yeah, let's throw that
let's
in.
Let's imagine
there.
Everyone there wears ties.
Yeah, everybody fine. At GE wears ties. Nobody at Google
maybe
wears ties.
Maybe some investment
ties.
Banking operation or something like
it's,
that.
It's those extra four letters. That's what did it. That's why GE can't compete.
Yeah, I agree. So he doesn't know his languages. That's one thing I want to make totally clear. And
no.
I think we have. But there's an interesting problem.
What's that?
Even for people, I think, who do study languages and shit. Like, I think there is just an intrinsic problem, and
right.
that is Egyptian. The hieroglyphics are always a source of debate about what's being imparted here.
Yeah.
There's no – I don't think there's a perfect sort of translation
right.
of a lot of hieroglyphic.
Because you can't really understand the idioms through pictograph language.
It becomes much more difficult, and – I will say this, our boy here, Pierre, is not studied.
I think he's figured it out, though.
He hasn't studied hieroglyphics.
Sometimes it takes a fresh pair of eyes, Dan.
I agree with one premise that he's making that is...
Pictures are cool!
Well, no, I think he probably would say that, but it's not part of his argument. It's that I don't think that there's a perfect understanding, even in the academic community, of the hieroglyphic language from ancient Egypt. I think that's probably, I don't know, I haven't looked into it 100%, but I think that's the consensus. Where he goes from there is not good. It's pretty bad.
I think this is a very good point, and I'm probably going to disappoint a lot of your listeners. I think when we're dealing with both, and this appertains both to the academic study of the discipline and also relating to the alternative media, you have to understand that the Disciperati do not want this information disseminated. So there are, if you like, a lot of lies. So, for example, the Egyptian hieroglyphs.
Real quick, when he's...
Disciperati? Is that what he said? The Disciperati.
That's sort of the Illuminati of language.
Right,
the people
right.
who are like the priest class that is trying to keep you
yeah.
from understanding the... Yeah, they're villains.
Yeah, from context clues, I got what he was talking about, but I really wanted to be sure on
it
that one.
It was worth pointing out.
Yeah.
Haven't been deciphered. Okay, I mean, at one level, they never went out of circulation, and the priesthood know how to read the hieroglyphs.
Done.
But the museum sign lists, they just don't make sense.
I agree completely.
Of course you do.
I agree completely.
We all do, Carrie.
I have noticed that, I just want to say that I have noticed that, if you study the glyphs, on, you know, and you listen to explanations of the guides and so on, and they try to tell you what one thing looks like. It almost never looks like what they say it looks like, and yet it does look like something that is, you know, you could name, and therefore it seems
that this is a very careful.
Go ahead.
This is a very careful concealment. So
the two things there, that's a good example of him just talking over Carrie and being very rude.
Yeah, that was very rude.
And then the second thing is like, let's play this out. I'll be Carrie, you be someone at, like showing me a hieroglyph.
Okay, cool. That one.
That looks like a spaceship.
I was going to say that it actually looks a little bit like,
parentheses, my arms are crossed.
Sakmet, who is.
Eyebrow raised. Well, that looks like a spaceship.
Okay. Now, there is a lot of room for interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
There are many different things that can go on, and we don't 100% understand, but I do believe that we understand it enough to point to the fact that this has been seen on many different worship sites for the god Sakmet. And so we can kind of draw from all of these conclusions that they were most likely referencing this. I can see your frustration.
Spaceship.
All right. Sir, we're going to have to get you out of this McDonald's.
I am a ma'am. I'm Carrie in this scenario.
I'm sorry. Your deep baritone was difficult to overcome.
That's what I imagine happens. Like, I go around and I go to these tours of these, I see these hieroglyphs and these people who are on the tours and the experts. They don't like what I see in it.
No, they don't.
That's fine. That's a different conversation than they're trying to lie to you about it or something like that. And then also, I disregard and don't approve of at all the idea of like dismissing of scholarship. Like, because the people that he's claiming are lying about all these things are people who dedicate their fucking lives to this research and do it in a rigorous academic setting.
Right.
And this is another really important thing. What he has done, what Pierre Sabak has done, and a lot of these people on Project Camelot have done, is short circuit and take a shortcut around like legitimate criticism.
Rigorous study?
Right.
Yeah.
Because people in academic settings who study, I don't know, linguistics, study the evolution of language. They study cross-cultural language, the way that like a word is used in one culture and then it's used in another, like borrowed, like all that sort of thing. That is a form of actual academics. What he has done is created the appearance of understanding any of that without any of the criticism that comes in the academic world. Because if you were
Are you saying that his studies aren't peer-reviewed?
If you were someone who is in the fucking academic world and you were making these sorts of arguments, you would never – it would never fly.
Uh-uh.
All the academic world is about people being like, hold on now. Let's look at what you're saying. And if you are right, hooray. But if you're not – hooray also, because then we can refine our ideas from there.
Exactly.
And try and figure out where your misunderstanding came from and hope we can figure out a way that also helps future understanding. And because he's not willing to engage in that process, he lives entirely outside of the academic world, but still pretends he's a part of it. And all it does is just, it's a cheat. It's a fake.
The stolen valor of smart people.
Yeah.
Like, that's the idea.
So in this next clip, Alex, see, get this. I said Alex because in this next clip, they start talking about some really Alex-y things.
Okay.
And some of these things are exactly what you heard Alex espouse on Rogan's podcast,
mm-hmm.
which is why this is even more relevant.
God damn it.
And also getting back to the military. So there's a military structure. The reptilians, again, have a militant, a hierarchical structure, and they are where you get, the army gets its orders, so to speak.
Absolutely agree with that. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's the centralized intelligence.
So what we have there is Carrie and Pierre expressing exactly what Alex was talking about for a very long time on Rogan's podcast.
How is it that everything is relevant?
These aliens that they speak to are giving the military and intelligence orders and stuff like that. that is the big truth that Alex wanted to drop on Joe with, like, his, they take all the military, the generals, they take the DMT and then they go into meetings with aliens.
Yeah.
All that shit. That's what's being expressed by Carrie and Pierre Sabak here. Like, when we look at that stuff coming out of Alex's mouth, it's not interesting. It's exactly what these fucks say.
Yeah.
Like, that's the point I want to make here, is that, like, he's not treated like these people, but he fucking should be. He should be seen as like, oh, you have, you've lost it.
Yeah, you're a silly bitch.
Yeah, instead of being like, oh, maybe he's talking about some secret document I haven't read. He hasn't. He's talking about the same shit that's on Project Camelot.
Yeah.
And it's just as unfounded.
It's really disappointing that everything is fucking related to it. Like, we do a episode, four episodes about the Sandy Hook investigation, and then the very next thing we do is something modern with him and Joe Rogan, and we talk about Sandy Hook. And then we're like, let's do a Project Camelot episode. That'll be fun and unrelated to everything. And then, bam, it's right back into Alex Jones shit.
Well, some of that is the sort of just the foundation of why this show exists.
Right. That's fair.
When we started this, and the reason the Project Camelot is part of our sphere is because there's a low-key connection between them. Like, it's not like that is, it doesn't always come up.
No,
but
of course
it
not.
Often does.
Yeah.
And there is a connection that is really important to people. It is the same sort of, that's why I wish we would have named the show They're All Con Men or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I wish.
Is it too late?
It's too late now.
It might be too late.
We have a brand. But what, like, that
it's
is,
a longer Twitter handle, that's for sure.
Yeah. And that, but that is what it's all about. Like, it is that these people are playing with different masks, maybe, or different presentations, but they're all doing similar cons.
Yeah.
In a certain way. That is manipulating gullible people into having political positions that are fucked up.
Yeah.
And are really bad. Like, in this episode earlier, she was talking about the, like, we're under maritime law. That's trying to encourage people to be sovereign citizen-y.
Right.
And if you are encouraging people to be sovereign citizen-y, that's about as hard right as you can get.
You well,
know, that's
you know,
deeply, deeply right.
You know that the word for snake oil in Greek is actually basiliskoso oil.
No, that's king. It's off. It's snake oil.
Oh,
no, it's
okay.
Office oil. Office oil.
It's office oil.
Yeah.
That's a good product line.
Mm-hmm.
We're selling office oil. It's going to really do, I don't know, what do you need in the office?
It'll get you through the day.
It's going to get you through the day. It's just weed.
So that was one example that's pretty overt about, like, what Alex is bringing into the world now. But again, I do think, and I, much like Pierre, I can't prove any of this.
Oh, yeah.
But I do think that it's probably partially an intentional plan on Alex's part. That he recognizes that these sorts of ideas are really attractive among the communities he might be able to penetrate.
Yeah.
Vis-a-vis Joe's audience.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people who are like, maybe even Project Camelot listeners who are into these weird ideas. So the idea that, like, he's mirroring things that you hear here is, it at its base is probably just Alex trying to diversify his audience portfolio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I see what you're saying.
But at the same time, he is still expressing those things, and you hear them mirrored here. This next clip is a little bit worse, because it's Carrie mirroring Alex in a very deep way.
So we're also talking about money as being a form of, it basically, as you say, indebtedness or being in prison,
capital letters,
by this financial indebtedness, and then
system. Yeah.
Yeah, and then this is how they rule, is through the indebtedness that one is supposed to feel and behave as if, and then their control over money as the Rothschilds, of course, the Red Shields, who are hiding the higher levels of the Anunnaki and Illuminati. By their services to hide the others, right?
Right. He does agree.
Of course.
But, like, that's just a, like, Federal Reserve kind of bullshit with, like, a little bit better dressing on it. You know, that's the same thing that Alex talked about years and years ago about the idea the Rothschilds run the world and stuff, and there's hidden powers behind them. She's just naming what those hidden powers are, and they're aliens.
Well,
that's all that is. Like, she,
I
Alex
do remember
says globalists, that, she says Anunnaki.
Yeah, I do remember that both Ron Paul and Bernie Sanders teamed up to audit the aliens,
that's
if
true.
I recall correctly.
That's true. They wanted to audit those worship buckets.
And only
whatever.
Three senators were aliens at the time that the Federal Reserve was created.
That's true.
And that's why they got away with it all.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the language.
And the part that I really find the most repulsive out of any of this is, like, it's all bullshit, but there is an idea that is true behind it, and that is the system of debt that exists in the United States is an incredibly abusive system that business interests use to make you incapable of escaping their grasp to a certain extent.
Right.
You know, like, the that is real. It's not some sort of a nefarious globalist alien plot or anything like that. It's the extension of unchecked capitalism.
So much.
It's what happens if you can get away with it and you're an amoral company. Why wouldn't you trap people? Why wouldn't you?
You know, it makes the most sense financially.
Totally.
Yeah. No, so many of these people, whenever they
fuck what they're going through,
whenever they describe all of these problems and then, you know, you come up to them with historical based solutions. You know, whenever people describe, oh, indebtedness is making us all slaves, you know, like all of this stuff. And then you describe the solutions that are going to help them. They're like,
sounds like
not
socialism.
Not enough racism, and it sounds like socialism, so I'm going to go with it's probably aliens.
If Carrie wanted to be real with the shit, why wouldn't she come into the studio and be like, listen, I've just uncovered a new plot. The reptilians have started payday loans or something like that. Why not? Because then you could use your services for good.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Payday loans are 100% evil. Actually, they're 7,000% evil, which is the amount of interest they charge over a short period of time.
Don't fucking use whatever narratives you're bandying about in order to demonize the Rothschilds as if that fucking matters.
No shit.
As if their family's wealth hasn't been diffused over generations and shit like that.
There's a Rothschild who's getting a payday loan right now.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, use it for some sort of positive thing like that.
Right.
Why not? Target your fucking audience.
The aliens have created private prisons, and we need to get rid of it.
Bingo.
There we go.
We're all
on the same team.
Why not?
Yeah.
If you care, why not do that?
Well, because
you don't care.
I don't know. I think it's because they're trying to attract, and they know they're trying to attract. Like, that's
hard right wingers.
Whenever we talk about self-awareness for this, even if you're saying that they are on the stupid evil spectrum, you know, where they're more on the stupid side, they're smart enough to know who is going to buy their bullshit.
And it's right wingers. And it's not because right wingers are intrinsically stupider. It's that whatever language they want, whatever they want their points to be, are more attractive to people on that side.
Of course.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree with that. That's, yeah. But, I mean, it's something that they would never accept. In the same way that Alex presents, like, and pretends that he was like, I'm above the political divide.
Or,
and Carrie's like, I'm not into politics. I'm talking about aliens. You're like, all that shit. No, you know. You know damn well. What you put into the world is attractive to people who are, I mean, aggressively skeptical, like skeptical past the point of reasonability.
Yeah.
And anti-government, which is a hallmark of right-wing extremism.
For sure.
So, great.
Hey, guys. Great work. I'm really proud of all of you.
But, Jordan, look, I know that you're a guy who loves comic books. And
I like comic books.
You enjoy comic books.
I like a good graphic novel.
You like a hero.
I'm not a superhero comic book guy. I don't do superhero comics. I can't do them.
But have you ever in your life?
When you were
a younger man?
No, I've never done superheroes.
Where do you put Swamp Thing on that? Do you think he's a superhero?
I think Swamp Thing is a tragic representation of the damage that we are doing to the environment.
Well, I understand that, but do you think he's a superhero? Because he has powers.
I don't think so.
He has powers.
Powers don't make
you a
superhero.
You can talk to the green.
Dan, so many people could be Spider-Man. It's not about Spider-Man's powers. It's about the choice to be a hero, Dan.
Okay, so now that makes
we
me...
We could
that,
all be heroes.
That makes me think that you do like Marvel stuff. and you're just saying that they aren't superheroes. That's what I'm hearing right
now.
No,
I'm saying that we could all be heroes.
Mm-hmm. Just for one day.
It doesn't take powers, Dan. Song. It doesn't take powers.
Right. I think a lot of that is the sort of thrust behind a lot of the superhero stories.
Yeah, of course.
Like if you engage with the mythology of it.
No, I just mean I don't read the serialized comics.
Sure. But that,
I like the mythology.
I only bring that up because we're going to get into some wild misrepresentations of heroes, with superheroes and comic books.
Oh, okay. I remember the Greek for Iron Man is actually Iron Man.
Ferrum Anthropos. No, that's
nope.
Latin and Greek.
In Iron. Yeah.
So, Jordan, here comes. We're getting into comic books. Are you ready?
I don't know.
Well, what's interesting about this, I think this is really fascinating, and that is...
Hold on.
Carrie...
Shazam!
Nope.
Now I am.
Okay. Carrie is bringing in stuff that's very familiar to Alex Jones' world.
Uh-huh.
But then trying to bridge the gap with comic book world. Like, it's really insane. When I heard this clip, I got really troubled. In a way that I don't generally with her. You'll see what I mean.
But what I want to ask you has to do with the role of 5G, which is the Internet of Things, as you may have followed the information, and as well as
the role of 5G
the fact
is actually
that there's
handled.
A high degree of radiation always
tough
it
audition
seems,
process
in connection with technology. So even 4G has a lot of radiation, and that this is somehow supposed to be detrimental to humans, and yet at the same time, it's quite possible that this radiation, that mutants, if you follow the X-Men, story, and this is all
Dark
based
Phoenix.
On a secret space program knowledge, that if you want to create basically a mutated human or special powers in a human, get them to expand into their brain that they don't use, et cetera. What you need to do is to douse them with radiation or douse the mother with radiation. Yeah. So this is in essence what they are doing now to planet Earth. And people are in a panic over this.
People are in a panic.
So what's interesting is that Carrie and Alex are both concerned about 5G. Technology, but their concern seems slightly different in as much as Carrie's concerned it's going to create the X-Men. And that the X-Men...
Is that a concern or like a bonus?
Well, I mean, I think that if you watch any of those movies, you know that some of these mutations can go pretty terribly.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of devastating effects that come from a Magneto or whatever. But also, Magneto probably wouldn't behave the way he did if people just accepted mutants. So there's also...
It is kind of a allegory.
But there are some rogue categories of, just completely destructive villains.
Yeah, like that guy who was a toad or whatever. Yeah, that's a destructive...
I think his name was Toad. Yeah. Pretty creative. I get it.
Do you know...
I get it.
Do you know why...
I want to say I get it.
Do you know why all of those arguments are easily... Bullshit.
Well, one, because they're incredibly stupid.
Right. But
just on their face.
Just on their face.
The X-Men is a secret space program plan.
Of course.
Cool.
No, that's utterly stupid. But part of the reason that it is such a stupid idea is because those comics started around the timeline when we understood radiation.
Right.
So...
That was something I was going to bring up a little bit later.
So it stands to reason that were radiation to be capable of creating mutants with higher powers, it would have happened 70 fucking years ago.
Radiation was like a sensational topic in the early 60s, late 50s, when a lot of these comic books were starting to be created, and it became a MacGuffin. It just became like a storytelling device that was
actually
super
easy
in order to tell these stories. That, I mean, with the X-Men, if you really want to get into that, it's about people who are different, not being accepted by humanity as a whole, and some people responding poorly to that, and some people trying to heal the schism, or whatever. That's the idea. That's the metaphor of the X-Men that you can tell 100 different stories with, and they have done way more than 100.
Well, I mean, when you look at, I don't remember, is it the first or the second X-Men? There was an entire, coming out allegory there of like, this is the gay experience of coming out.
Yeah.
And I remember that line. There is one line that I thought justified literally the entire X-Men series. Whenever somebody comes out to their mother as an X-Man and she goes, have you tried not being a mutant? And you're like, that is the fucking line.
Yeah, I mean, there's that in the movies. And then I don't know necessarily if it was intended to be any specific group that is othered.
Right.
Or anything like that. But you read those early X-Men comics, that's what it's about. It's about groups that are marginalized.
Yeah.
Needing to find each other to help each other exist in the world where people don't understand them. So, like, for her to be like, that's a secret space program kind of thing where you get radiation into people, yeah, and then you create these mutants. And that's what they've, because that implies to me that that's something that she's had in her mind for a while. That, like, we should be pretty concerned about the idea that they're making 4G, not even just 5G, 4G technology is just to flood women with radiation so they give super babies out.
Do you know how you can definitively prove that that's stupid? Is because...
any test with radiation?
Well, not just that, but historically. In the 1950s, whenever radiation was this new, cool fucking thing, they used to put it in goddamn toothpaste.
True.
So your teeth would glow, and you then lost all your teeth. You didn't get superpowers. You just lost all your teeth.
Another good argument is General Stubblebine, who tried to create superpowers in people and failed miserably, but Alex thinks that's a whitewash.
Wow, there were so many times where they would do these military tests where they would set off a nuclear bomb, and they would have
yeah, I know what you're going to say.
What?
Bunch of soldiers got superpowers.
No.
Ooh.
Instead, they did this training exercise where they walked through the debris that was left over to see whether or not they were visible. And what if we could set off a nuclear bomb and then we could use that also as a cloaking technique? And those guys did not get superpowers.
Bullshit.
Instead, they died of cancer.
Bullshit.
That is how that went.
Bullshit.
Yeah. So it's not superpowers. It's cancer.
It turns out the Carrie is operating under a, 70-year-old fantasy understanding of what radiation does to people.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's nuts.
Well, hold on. Hold on, Dan. Sure, maybe it kills 99.9% of people who get exposed to too much radiation. But what about that 0.01%, Dan?
They're all in bunkers having their secret abilities tested
that
right now.
That sounds right.
It's all off the books.
Sounds right.
Sure. So I would say, in terms of a conspiracy that you can't prove, I would fine. Whatever. I'll take that as like a side thing. You know, like
X-Men?
No, because that I...
Yep.
If you want to tell me that... I'll say I reject it first.
Whole cloth.
First.
Okay.
But if you tell me that 99.9% of people who are exposed to tons and tons of radiation get cancer and it's a horrible, debilitating thing...
Right.
And then that tiny one, like 0.001% or whatever, get superpowers and the government is testing them in a lab... I'm going to tell you I can't disprove that. I don't think it's true.
Right.
My gut says no, and I'll wait until there's any evidence of that to say it is true. But Carrie is a bad representative to make this argument, because what she says in this next clip made me laugh so fucking hard.
This is true.
Put your mic down.
Okay.
Because it goes back to Marvel, and Carrie has some news about Marvel. That is actually news from 1962.
Wait, we got the Dark Phoenix trailer? Is that what she's going to talk about?
No, you wish.
I wish!
This is news from 1962.
I do remember the TV series, The Incredible Hulk, and The Incredible Hulk turned into the Hulk due to this high level of gamma radiation, which altered his DNA.
Well, I have recently also found that the Spider-Man was also bit by a radioactive spider. This is very key, because this is where they are going.
She's fucking me. She's fucking with me, right? She is fucking with all of us. That is bullshit. There's no way. She is fucking with us.
She has recently found out that the Spider-Man was bit by a radioactive spider.
No, I don't buy that at all.
She has recently found out.
She just winked at us. She just winked at all of us. She just, took a, she, there, that was a,
I don't think so.
That was a mug to the camera.
I don't think so.
That was a, I was watching from SNL who does the mugging.
I don't think it was.
No way.
It's crazy.
Look.
I just found out that the Spider-Man was bit by a radioactive spider. A essential plot point of this character who's existed, like I said, since 1962 yeah. in comic books and has, I don't know, 20 movies have come out in the last 10 years.
Here is
there are so many Spider-Man movies!
If she's talking about
that. They've done the origin story like 5 times!
If she's talking about that now, specifically, this is recent, right?
This came out like a week ago.
Okay. So, do you know what else came out, very recently?
The Dark Phoenix trailer.
No.
Oh. Oh, into the Spider-Verse.
Into the Spider-Verse.
Got it got an Oscar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And do you know why? It is amazing. It is so good.
I haven't seen it, but the trailer made me want to see it.
You should see it. It's fucking fantastic.
Yeah. Very rare that a trailer makes me want to see a movie. Also, I should say that part of it is because I know that Nicolas Cage is one of the voices.
Ooh, man, you have no idea. It's so good.
Nicolas Cage.
So good.
Nicolas Cage coming Nicolas in Cage. To do that movie. That's a good sign.
That's Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. So Carrie has found out that the Spider-Man has been bit by a radioactive spider.
It's about time.
I can't stress how crazy that is.
She can't possibly... No, she had to have been fucking with us.
No, because when I heard that clip, I was like, all right, I get it. If he's talking about how the Hulk, the Incredible Hulk, he
from
becomes...
Also from the 70s.
Maybe the Lou Ferrigno
Yeah, exactly.
Version.
He's talking about the Lou Ferrigno TV series.
It's possible. Like, I don't know of another TV series. There have been movies.
There have not been another TV series.
But like,
he's talking about Lou Ferrigno.
So he's bringing that into the conversation.
Yeah, there's been cartoons.
He's brought that into the conversation. And so Carrie coming in with like, also, Spider-Man was bit by a radioactive spider. I'd be like, you're just adding to the conversation.
Right.
When she said recently.
Recently found out that's disturbing.
Recently.
That's what I'm saying. She's fucking with us.
That's an unacceptable word to be in the conversation.
She has to have been fucking with us. There's no way I will buy that. Not even. Look, she, at the very least, she's a human being in 2019. She knows about the fucking Spider-Man. There have been countless trailers. Not even. She doesn't even need to see the movie. Just the trailer for movies. Where Spider-Man was bitten
the
by
Tobey Maguire ones in the trailers definitely had him getting bit by a spider.
Definitely.
100%.
100%.
I remember that very clearly.
No way does she had.
The first one came out in 2001, and I only remember that because I worked at a movie theater back
right.
then. And there were trailers for it that had the Twin Towers in it that got recalled.
Oh, yeah,
because
that's right.
he spun a web between the Twin Towers that caught an enemy helicopter
that's
in it.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, and so they had to be recalled. Yeah. We had these like people who came and like reacquired all of the trailers.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
No, don't ever show that. That sort of thing.
Right. No, that's what happened to the first Strokes album. Is this it? It came out on 9/11 and they had to recall all of them because it's so many references
too many songs
to the Twin
about,
Towers.
The Towers, yeah. So, like, it's been, I don't know, let me look at my clock, 18 years, since the first, like, big Spider-Man movie came out.
Even before that, there was the Amazing Spider-Man cartoon, all the way back
Your
in-
Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. He was you can't, she was fucking with us. No, 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 this is too far.
She recently
this
found
This is too
out.
Far. This
she
is too
recently.
Far. No, 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 unacceptable.
It is unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
No matter what the argument is, it's unacceptable.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it is, but it's unacceptable.
You recently found out. That is impossible. That is impossible.
It's crazy.
That, but not even that. Not even, here's why that is 100% impossible. This is not the first conspiracy douchebag to talk about Marvel characters and radiation. And she's
probably
gone
not.
To so many of these conferences, so many of these paranormal bullshit, sooner or later in her past, in her, you know, 20-year career of being a conspiracy theorist lunatic.
Weirdo.
Somebody must have been at a panel and have been like, mutants are created, it's just like in Spider-Man.
They're trying to externalize
yeah.
the shit
she
by these comic
us.
Books.
She's fucking with us, no.
But she never brings that up, and she is now. And I think the-
That's crazy.
I think there's one possibility she's fucking with us, and if so, well done, Carrie. Because
well
that's
done,
crazy.
Gary. That is
because
fantastic.
It hinges on one word. It hinges on recently.
Recently.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
The rest, if she just said that, I'd be like, let's laugh at this or
play
whatever.
Play the clip one more time.
But the recently is so fucked up.
I need to hear this one more time.
You do, for sure?
I really need to know if she's fucking with me.
I do remember the TV series, The Incredible Hulk, and The Incredible Hulk turned into the Hulk due to this high level of gamma radiation, which altered his DNA.
Well, so, I have recently also found that the Spider-Man was also bit by a radioactive spider. This is very key because this is
God,
where
damn
they
it.
Are going.
She is so deadpan.
It's hard to
she
tell.
She has to be fucking with us,
it's
but
not
that
a bit.
Sounds real.
Also,
she is Phil Hartman. She is Phil Hartman level straight manning right now.
The Incredible Hulk also didn't turn into the Hulk because of radiation. He turned into the Hulk when he became angry because of something that happened with radiation. Like, he doesn't become the Hulk because of the radiation. I mean, I understand that that's the root of it.
Well,
it's when he gets angry,
right.
He turns into the Hulk. He's Bruce Banner or David Banner, depending on when the time frame
depending
was.
On our Ferrigno levels.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, no, I
don't know how she's not fucking with us.
The more I listen to this, the more I think I like the idea that she's fucking with us. And if it is, like I said, well played, Carrie. Second,
deadpan.
If she's not, which I don't think she is, I think it is probably what you were speculating, that is that Into the Spider-Verse came out.
Oh, for sure.
And it's a more diverse version
Fantastic.
Of Spider-Man.
Fantastic.
That I think that people end up have been attacking much more from the right in the same way that when Ghostbusters
that is a good point.
When
Holy
Ghostbusters
shit,
came
I didn't
out
even
with
think
women,
about that.
Everyone on the right was super attacking it, and they're like, fuck this, I hate this noise.
Right.
And so the idea of like Into the Spider-Verse being a movie that came out with a black Spider-Man.
Miles Morales, man.
And then a bunch of other Spider-Man, a woman Spider-Man. And
Spider-Gwen.
Right. But so there's all the...
And of course, John Mulaney's perfect...
Spider-Pig.
Peter Porker.
And then my man Nick Cage.
Nick Cage is 1930s Spider-Man. So, Spider-Noir or whatever it is.
But so there is a diverse idea of that identity of Spider-Man or whatever. And it's entirely possible that just there was so much right-wing backlash to it, and that's the stuff that she sees online, that she became aware of it.
Well, there's also the multiverse theory in Into the Spider-Verse.
Well,
so that may be,
that.
So that may be one of the reasons that it penetrated into her bullshit consciousness.
I mean, maybe, but I think the bigotry is a much more likely option.
Right. No,
in terms
of course.
Why are you...
Of course.
Why is this now stuck in your craw? It's been... 80 years almost since Spider-Man came out. Like, it's been a long fucking time.
Oh, God. I don't know.
No, not 80 years. 70-ish.
It's
been a long time.
I think
62?
Well, do you know what I just recently found out? Superman is an alien. He's not even from here.
You know what I recently found out?
What?
Found out this Batman guy.
What
he
happened?
Wouldn't fight crime if his parents weren't murdered.
No shit!
Yeah.
Oh, shit. God damn it. Do you know what I just...
So I think that the globalists and, or the reptilians want to murder people's parents in order to make them vigilantes.
Right. Did you... here's what I just recently found out.
Mm-hmm.
This goblin character...
Oh, no.
His whole thing is that he's green.
Mm-hmm.
It's bananas. He's the green goblin.
You know what I just found
out? I thought he was just a regular goblin.
You know what I just found out?
What?
There's this undersea guy.
We can do this bit for an hour.
We can talk to fish. I honestly am not sure if I'm going to go with Aquaman or Namor at this point.
Do you know what's crazy?
What's up?
I watched the Aquaman movie, the most recent one. With,
I'm sure, it's great.
What,
Jason Momoa?
No, it has really negative consequences.
Oh, no.
That nobody deals with during the show. There's this massive undersea war about blah, 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 whatever it is, right? And Jason Momoa, Aquaman, can communicate with all of the animals or whatever, but it is not presented as communication so much as it is mind control. So what Jason Momoa
linguistics.
Does, what Jason Momoa does is create an army of slaves. Mm-hmm. And nobody ever talks about that.
Well,
that is wrong, Dan.
I don't disagree.
Yeah.
I don't disagree.
Yeah.
I don't
Aquaman is a slaver.
I don't know. I just recently found out that these guys are really good at driving cars.
Oh, yeah?
And it spiraled out of control
what
from
happened?
There into them.
How fast was it?
Being involved in basically espionage.
Was there an X?
These guys are so good at driving cars.
I almost thought you were talking about Speed Racer. Now I
nope, talking about Fast and Furious. But I lost the thread. Don't know how to do this because there's no actual superpowers until Hobbs and Shaw, which is coming out. I can't wait for it.
There are absolutely superpowers, which are the complete inability to die, regardless of any circumstances.
That is true. They do seem to have that Wolverine-style regenerative.
They take the main character shield to a ridiculous degree.
Which I appreciate. Anyway, Fast and Furious is better than Spider-Man.
You haven't seen Into the Spider-Verse?
No.
It's actually really
great. I'm
sure
it's awesome.
It's actually really great.
But I'll still die on that hill that Fast and Furious is better than all other franchises of all time. Anyway, Carrie has recently found out about Spider-Man. We've taken way too long to talk about that because it's the craziest bullshit in the world.
It's the craziest fucking thing!
Yeah.
That's insane!
It's nonsense.
That is insane!
So we come to the end of this episode, Jordan, and what we have is in front of us a tableau of, like, just someone who doesn't understand linguistics pretending he's a linguistics expert, which is fun. I think that Robert Temple stuff is really fun, and I always enjoy that sort of conversation. So we got to talk about that. Then this at the end, the confluence of the Alexei narratives, whether it's the sovereign citizen shit, whether it's the Rothschild banking nonsense, whether it's the ideas of like 5G being dangerous.
Yeah.
Like it's very similar. These worlds are similar.
For sure.
The way they're not similar is that Alex is concerned about 5G as trying to give people cancer. Carrie is concerned. It's going to create the X-Men, and she has recently found out about the Spider-Man.
I can't!
Which is nuts.
That is nuts.
It's nuts. And I love it. That's why we talk about this.
I don't
That's
like it.
That's why we talk about this
I don't
shit.
Like it that Alex has a literal reasonable position in terms of radiation causing cancer.
Well, it's a little bit exaggerated, but it has a base in reasonable.
It is bananas exaggerated. But the idea of radiation causing cancer makes sense.
It's fair.
Yeah.
Whereas radiation creating the X-Men, not fair.
The idea that you don't know this, but I can't get over that.
Anyway, Carrie, if you're trolling us, good job.
Good on you.
Yeah, good.
Good
job.
On you.
But we'll
Carrie
be back.
Is the Eddie Bravo of this episode.
Yeah. We needed a break from some reality-based stuff, and so I'm glad we took this diversion. It's weird for us to do this on a Monday, but that's what it is.
We had a long string of, everybody needed a wacky Wednesday on a Monday.
We needed a breath.
We all did.
A little bit of a pause.
We all needed it.
Yeah. But we'll be back with another episode on Wednesday. But also, I did an interview with a gentleman, Brad. He has a podcast called the Cosmic Geppetto Podcast.
Okay.
Which everyone should go check out. I believe there's actually even, I think he posted a link to it in our group. On Facebook. I'm not good at...
That's cool shit.
I'm not good at promotion or re-promotion or anything like that.
I think our entire careers have proved that.
Yeah, absolutely. But you can find it. Cosmic Geppetto. It was a good time. I really enjoyed talking to him. I mean, if you listen to this podcast pretty regularly, I don't think that we talk about all that much that's new.
Uh-huh.
But it was still a fine... It was a great conversation. So check it out.
Good.
Everybody
do that.
Beyond that,
for my plugs, if you would like to see me do stand-up, just start going to a lot of stand-up shows, and then maybe sometime you'll see me. That's
Ooh.
Pretty much, those are my plugs.
Randomness plugs.
This is why we are bad at promotion.
Chaos plugs. but we have a website, knowledgefight.com, where you can find all kinds of information about our show and
Indeed you can. Dan,
stuff.
Do we have a Twitter account?
We do. It's knowledge_fight. We're also on iTunes. You can find that. Review, subscribe, rate.
Indeed.
All that good stuff. But, hey, look, Pierre has murdered the English language. I will say that.
I don't think he's murdered the English language.
He's murdered
so much
all
languages.
Yeah. He has wrought devastation upon linguistics as a form of study, but he's never murdered anybody, and I appreciate that on some levels, because there's this one guy... he killed a guy.
Spider-Man?
Technically, nope.
Okay.
Maybe, probably.
I don't know. Probably.
I bet he has.
Technically.
Yeah, but he doesn't exist. So
that's true.
That's
a big
that's
issue.
A consideration.
Although the government's working on it, apparently.
One of these days. But for now, one guy has probably technically murdered a guy, and that's Alex Jones.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex.
Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.